We have so much to discuss this week that any one story could be the entire episode. So we might have a little bit long show this week, but we'll see what happens. Let's begin with tidying up some topics from last week, which is the preview launch of the Apple Card in the United States as Apple's new credit card with Goldman Sachs and MasterCard. Now it's available to all iPhone users in the U.S. and no invitation needed. And there is a change or an improvement to how cashback works, which is really soon to happen. So what's the story there, Mayo?
Yeah, this is interesting. So obviously we're expecting the card to launch in August, like they said, that it came out. Then in the hidden at the bottom of the press release was a thing saying that Apple is going to start doing merchant offers over the coming months. And today they announced Uber and Uber Eats. So if you make a purchase on Uber using Apple Pay, you can also qualify for 3% cashback, whereas obviously normally it would be 2% on any other merchant. And they very clearly state that they plan to expand this to, you know, more and more over time. And it's quite a big shift because, you know, all the way up from March till August at the moment, they were just saying, oh, you only get 3% on Apple purchases. But now you can get it on, they're obviously partnering with the party retailers as well, which is kind of interesting that they're actually doing that so quickly. But I think it's cool. And some people were tweeting the Uber has its own credit card, but they don't even give you 3% cash back on Uber rides. So it's almost like the Apple card's better if you're just, you know, riding Ubers everywhere.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I thought this was interesting too, because like you said, there was no indication that this was going to be coming from March till now, and they didn't wait until, you know, a bunch of feedback from the Apple Card or numbers dropping in signups. This was, I guess, clearly part of the plan the whole time, and now they've got their first big partner. And that more will come soon. But the only thing that got me about this is that it feels a little bit more like normal credit cards where offers come and go, because this will be temporary, right? This won't be forever.
They didn't say it's going to end, but they had a terms and conditions small print thing footnote that kind of implied that these merchant offers are not going to last forever. So you're right, it does kind of complicate the messaging a bit more, because before it was, you know, the 3% on Apple purchases wasn't a temporary thing. That was just it, and it was very easy to explain. Whereas now it's like, for the time being, you can get 3% on Uber, but we may take that away. They don't say they're definitely going away, but they're leaving the door open to do a rotating set, which would be unfortunate because it muddies the messaging a little bit. But at least you can still say it's 2% with Apple Pay. Oh, and you might get 3% if you're at these places. It becomes a problem if they start doing aggressive advertising for it and stuff. Like every time they swap out the merchant offer, if you get a push notification saying, go buy something at this place now, right? That's when it starts to get a bit scummy, I think. But
yeah, and I will say also that it's definitely a positive. Even if it does kind of complicate the message, you get something that you literally get 1% more than you would have otherwise. So it's for the consumer, it's a net win. If you're responsible, the thing, I hope there's some clarity around or I guess we'll just wait and see, you know, is over time, are these things, do they go away? Is there any kind of pattern to detect? Is it seasonal? And then we'll see who are the other partners too. So that's interesting. And then as part of the launch, we got in the US moving from invite only whenever you registered to sign up, before everybody else. We got to see what does it look like to actually launch the card. And, you know, you mentioned a moment ago, will they do push notifications to advertise these promotions? So far we haven't had that for the Apple Card, with the wallet app and the iPhone, but they did put, in the wallet app on the iPhone, there's two sections. There's one section for passes, which is rewards cards, movie tickets, plane tickets, that kind of thing. And there's the card above, the section above that, which is for your debit card and your credit card or Apple Card. So it's the, you know, the Apple Pay section of that versus just the passbook section, historically. They had a new section, the third one at the top, that was divided from the rest, which you saw first before you saw everything else and you had to dismiss it. But it wasn't too scammy. There wasn't a push notification for it. And it was just a card, not a credit card, but an app store story card that says Apple Card is here, shows what it looks like, and it says start using Apple Card in minutes, and then it has an apply button. But it, even without hitting the apply button, you can tap that card, like story card, and it expands into a big, long, scrollable, just like an app story formatted explainer for what like Apple Card is and all, basically what you see from the website. And you know, obviously you can apply right there. You can apply with the plus button, but, you had mentioned this before, like that you thought that this is kind of how it would work. And they ended up kind of doing both things where they do put it in the plus button with, you know, you hit plus and then you see Apple Card or your existing debit or credit card. But then they're also doing this thing with this promotional card, which you can then tap away with the X button, but it is there. And it did show up on the App Store as well. For me, it was on the iPad and not on the iPhone for some reason. And then on the iPad version, you couldn't, I suppose you could apply. I'm not sure, but I didn't tap apply there, but
you can apply on the iPad because it just takes you to the wallet and Apple Pay settings panels. And it basically has a mini wallet app in there just for, you know, Apple Card management.
Yeah, that is there, but it also had the section for like, you know, if it's like an App Store, they're like, download this app here. And so it had that for wallet, but it wasn't actionable because it's an iPad and there's no wallet app. And it didn't like deep link you to the settings app. Maybe Apply does that, but at least that part of it was a little bit fragmented.
That probably means that story will be showing up on the phone. So they've linked the wallet app. So when it does show up on the phone, it will let you download wallet if you've deleted it for whatever reason.
And you can share stories on the App Store. So this is just like that. You can share the story. So just by me putting it in Slack and then opening it up on my iPhone, then I could see it on the iPhone. I just didn't see it like in the today list of stories at the time. But yeah, this is pretty much what you described that you expected to see. And it's not spammy. It's just like one more thing that you dismiss or use. And then
it's nice that they put a close button on the like root screen of it. You don't have to open it and then say, you know, ignore, if you know what I mean. So it's quite nice. Like,
They've also put the Apple Card as like a product section in the Apple Store app. Whenever you go to shop for products, it's under the iPod, like not included with iPod, but like below that's its own section, which I assume takes it to the wallet app if you go far enough. And then there are two versions of signs that Michael Steepers found in Apple stores that shows either the iPhone with the digital Apple Card on the screen or the physical Apple Card. And those are like the signs on easels, like where they say, you know, trade in your iPhone for a $10 kind of thing. So they're doing a push here. So there's that. And then there was also a Twitter account, which was interesting, a whole new Twitter account from Apple, at Apple Card on Twitter, verified with the bio, a new kind of credit card created by Apple, not a bank. Sign up for yours now. And
they've learned that they can use an account to tweet and do advertising with, because they've started, you can, Twitter lets you see all the promotions that an account's running, and they have indeed started paying for promoted ads for the Apple Card account, and they did a normal tweet for Apple Card. The Apple company account remains silent on the actual tweet front, which I think is so stupid, but hey, that's how they do it at the moment.
Yeah. And then the funny thing with Apple Card this week is that Apple published a support document that has gone viral, because it's a support document about like maintaining the look of your white titanium Apple Card, and then how to clean it, and then like what to avoid to avoid getting it damaged. The obvious thing is like don't put it in your magnets, because the magnetic stripe will lose its information, which is like on all cards. But then they also say like, because it's a white coated titanium layer, that you should not have it near leather or denim, because it is likely to take the color of that material and permanently discolor the white Apple Card. So my question to Apple support was, can you put it in the leather Apple iPhone folio case? And they to me, we went back and forth a little bit to try and get like a direct answer, but I think it is clear from what they're telling me that they don't want me to. They don't want me to do that.
Yeah, they either didn't know or they were dodging.
Yeah, they would quote the support document, and then I'd say, yeah, that's why I'm asking, and then they'd recommend other cases to me that weren't the folio case. So I haven't asked like Apple directly, like, you know, from a PR perspective of like, hey, what's the line on this? But that case has a magnet in it, but I think I don't think that should affect the card slot. And the magnets to wake and sleep the iPhone screen, like a smart cover would on an iPad. I think you're okay there, unless you like have the card on the outside of the case.
Yeah, and obviously there are, you know, existing credit cards that are made of metal as well. The Apple Card is not the first metal card, so
right.
And there's no rules about that for the folio case. So it should be okay.
Yeah, I just don't know. They didn't know either, but they seem to suggest to be better safe than sorry, not to use that. So, but I think that that's interesting. Is like, you know, there's kind of like 1 to 2 card slots there. You can fit like 1 to 2 cards in that case without making it really bulky, plus some cash. And that'd be perfectly reasonable to have your Apple card and your Apple card in the wallet app. So you covered your bases for where, you know, cards are taken.
Yeah, and one of the lines in the support document is literally, don't put it in a pocket with other cards, leave it on its own. And what they mean by that is if you have a big wallet that has, you normally have like 6 pockets for different cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's rare. There are the big slots where you just like shovel 5 cards together, but most wallets are, you have separate pouches for each card generally. So they're basically saying, you know, if you want to keep your Apple card in pristine condition, leave it on its own. And if you actually look on, you know, the support website, you can find similarly worded cautions for every Apple product that exists, but it is kind of funny at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they link to how to clean all Apple products and keep them, you know, pristine.
Yeah. Like the iPhone leather case instructions say, don't put it near denim because it will stain, but you know, everyone puts their iPhone leather case in their jeans. So
I've seen that happen.
It's almost like legally they have to like give you these instructions and exactly how you should care for it. We don't know how generous they're going to be with replacement cards, because what I think more than an individual damaging it in their pocket, what's going to happen is when it gets swiped on the readers at merchants, that's mm-hmm. when the metal's going to come off and it's going to leave like scratches or whatever. And you can get a replacement card, and the replacement cards are free, but I don't think they're going to let you just, you know, ad hoc get a new card every single month. They'll probably get annoyed at that. So
yeah, I think if you care a lot, then you could say, I lost my card and need a replacement, even though you didn't. And then you keep that one put away, and then it's your collector's item, and then you use the new one that you got, and then your Apple card and the wallet app updates to the new card, and then you're set. So you've got your like real world one and your old one that you collect for keeps. Like if you really care a lot, that's like a workaround, I guess. That isn't the only titanium story this week with the Apple Watch or Apple Card. There's a Apple Watch story too, a material leak. So what's going on with what watchOS tells us about new Apple Watches this fall?
Yeah, this is a great story. So a website called iHelpBR, which is like a Portuguese site, they found assets in the latest watchOS beta, similar to the September 10th hold for release image that we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. It was like that, but the Apple Watch version. And they found the video assets of the kind of startup, like onboarding video when you're pairing the watches. And it's that dial. It basically mimics the back of the watch, like the labeling on the back of the watch, but it does it on like a little animation. And it plays this when you first set up your watches. And on that label, it says designed by Apple in California, and it tells you your watch specifications. So it tells you the millimeters and it tells you the case type. And what was inadvertently left in this beta release was those animations, but they say titanium and ceramic cases on them.
44 millimeter titanium case, 44 millimeter ceramic case, and you can presume 40 millimeter.
Yeah, they found 40 millimeter versions as well. So mm-hmm. yeah, that's a pretty big leak on an almost, you know, confirmation we heard obviously earlier in the year from Ming-Chi Kuo that they were going to do a ceramic version, but this is the first time we've heard of titanium, so that surprise is out the door now.
Yeah, it's true. And titanium, like people had guessed that from the original Apple Watch, like from then on, like what could Apple do next, especially when they started doing ceramic? It's like, you know, if they wanted to go higher end, they could do titanium. I don't know how the cost of this differs from stainless steel. I've seen some people, I just don't know what the materials are like until I see them and like feel them and see the specs. But I saw some people saying that titanium, with like a brushed metal could be maybe less scratchy as the silver polished stainless steel material, which you can clean off and like wipe away, but it's still very scratchy. And that maybe also, it would also be lighter so that you would get like the stainless steel, you know, look almost, or, you know, it'd be like that metallic look, but it wouldn't be as heavy, which, you know, is either a plus or minus, depending on like what you want in your
watch. Yeah, I did a bit of research, and the titanium version will be significantly lighter. So, and for me, that's an advantage because I've obviously been accustomed to the sport models the whole time. And when I've tried holding the more expensive ones, they always feel too heavy to me. And again, I know if you bought one, I'm sure you get used to it, right?
Yeah, you get used to it.
Yeah. But I like it. If I had the choice, do I want it to be heavier or lighter? I pick lighter every time. So the titanium watch would mostly look like a stainless steel watch, but like a slightly darker shade, and it would be significantly lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously ceramic, we expect to look like the previous Series 3 ceramics.
Yeah, what they've had before, except this time it would have a bigger display. You know, it would less bezel, not in a square box. So, yeah. I am excited about this, and I thought about it, and it's like, oh, if presented with ceramic and titanium, and I want one of the two, titanium would be the newest because ceramic has existed before. But I really like the look of the white ceramic, and I was ready to purchase one with the Series 4, and then it didn't exist. And so I think this year, whatever the watch is, like, you know, it could be the Series 4 in ceramic. That's what I would purchase. You know, even if it isn't like a Series 5.
What if they only brought back the gray ceramic?
Yeah, then I wouldn't. It's the white, because I've owned the gray ceramic before, and it just doesn't work for, like, it doesn't do it for me. I don't feel like it's so pretty like I do with the white ceramic.
Yeah, the white one's so pretty.
Yeah, the gray one, they could do some changes there to like make it more noticeable, because like if what you want is a watch that looks different than most of the other watches, you know, and you think it looks kind of precious to you, the gray one just at a glance feels a lot like the aluminum one. So you're going from like it costs like literally like $1,000 more, but it looks like the one that, you know, costs a few, you know, $50. Yeah,
to me the black stainless steel looks way better than the gray ceramic.
Yeah.
And then white ceramic's the best.
Yep.
I wouldn't be surprised if they only brought back white ceramic. Like, I was joking with them about it, but I don't think they're going to bring back only dark gray. It'd either be both or thingy. But the white ceramic's like iconic, and I don't think a lot of people remember they even made a dark gray ceramic. I didn't see many of them anywhere.
Yeah. We wouldn't be able to tell from this asset leak if stainless steel was going to go away, because obviously it will run watchOS. But do you think stainless steel and titanium, there's a price difference there? Or do you think that they could replace stainless steel with titanium going forward?
Titanium is a more expensive material than stainless steel.
Mm-hmm.
But the amount of metal in an Apple Watch is small, right? Like,
yeah.
It's not a gigantic amount. So
it used to be more before the Series 4, and they replaced the entire back with glass, basically.
Yeah.
Or ceramic. So, ceramic. Huh.
If they wanted to, I am pretty sure that they could wholesale replace stainless steel with titanium and at basically the same price points.
Or bump it up a little bit by $50 or something.
Yeah, I don't think they have to go to ceramic levels of pricing to make it happen. Whether they'll do that or not is a completely different matter.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, they could just introduce, you know, new additions in both titanium and ceramic. So, but theoretically, and to me, I see titanium as just a better material than stainless steel. So if you were looking purely at like the clarity of the lineup, then it would be sensible for them to do exactly that and just have the titanium line in the mid-range now. Yeah. And then maybe keep the stainless steel for the black ones, for the black finish, because I'm not sure if titanium could do that. But for like the stainless, the gray stainless steel, that should just be like the titanium would be better, basically. So just on lineup alone, titanium should replace stainless steel. Whether that actually happens is a different matter.
Do you think that they would do an Apple Card white coating over titanium?
Oh, that'd be...
Well, I would say maybe, but now that since Quo has said ceramic comes back this year, I'd say no, since ceramic covers the white, you know, case color, that it would be awkward to have titanium with a white coating over it too.
Yeah, and that would look pretty bad when it got dinged and stuff.
Yeah, and it will get dinged, and it will get denimed and leathered.
Because white ceramic, if you ding the white ceramic, it's still white underneath.
Right, you just chipped through the layers of it, right?
Yeah, but the titanium, if it was painted white, if you chipped it, you'd just see gray, which is what a lot of the Apple Card's going to look like soon. But, you know, the watch, you wear it on your wrist, it's way more prone to getting dinged and scratched and stuff. So I think if they're going to do titanium, which they clearly are, it would just be the gray, the raw metal, essentially.
Okay, and then last question on this for me is, the stainless steel Apple Watch predated the iPhones going stainless steel with the iPhone X. Could you see a titanium iPhone, like iPhone 12, iPhone 13, that, you know, part of the appeal was it's lighter, but it's still a precious material compared to the aluminum version, you know, except from the weight of the glass, it could be lighter because it isn't steel.
Yeah, I think you could do that. Once you get to iPhone levels of scale, maybe the price differential comes back into play in a bigger way, and they'd want to maintain margin there. And realistically, the current iPhone design is mostly glass. Like, the stainless steel is just the band. So if that was titanium, would it make much of a difference to the weight? Probably not. The battery and the glass are way heavier, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, they'd make it a lot lighter if they changed the back to aluminium, for instance, rather than changing the band. But they're not going to do that because of wireless charging and everything else.
Yeah. All right. Last question. I didn't use MacBooks or PowerBooks or whatever they were called whenever they were titanium. Is this a different class, like different grade of titanium? Yeah. And then we're talking about that. And those were...
I believe the titanium ones were more like painted.
Okay.
So the titanium PowerBooks, which I never owned because it was, you know, kind of before my time.
Yeah, yeah.
But from what I know about them, they were very easily scratched and got dinged and looked bad because they were like painted and it was a very like thin layer more so, whereas presumably the watch is going to be titanium all the way through. We've all read some surprising online reviews, right? Whether you're trying to get a sweet deal on something you've been saving for or trying to find the best happy hour in town, it's generally a good idea to read the reviews first. So why should finding the right software for your business be any different? Read thousands of real software reviews and find the right software for your business at Capterra.com/happy hour. Not familiar with Capterra? Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. With over 950,000 reviews of products from real software users, you can discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Search more than 700 specific categories covering the entire range of business needs, from project management to email marketing to even running your own yoga studio. No matter what kind of software you're looking for to get your business off the ground or simply optimize existing workflows, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution and fast. How do you get started? Go to Capterra.com and drill down into a subcategory like app design, home building, insurance, or banking. It's completely free to look around and explore what's available. Don't trawl the web with endless Google searches. Capterra brings everything together into one simple-to-browse directory. Join the millions of people who use Capterra each month to find the right tools for their business. Visit capterra.com/happy hour for free today. Find the tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Capterra.com/happy hour. Capterra, CAPTERRA.com/happy hour. Capterra, software selection simplified.
Now tell me about our friends over at the EEC. This is the, what is it, the Eurasian database that covers wireless things.
Yeah, the Eurasian European Commission, Economic Commission. Yep. Eurasian Economic Commission. Yeah. And again, this database exists because in whatever country this is, like Eurasia, essentially, Russia, the law prescribes that Apple has to register any hardware device that uses encryption. And so basically all Apple devices use encryption, so they have to be in the database. And for reasons that I still can't understand, they always turn up in the database early. Like with the
not
FCC.
The day of, not released later.
Yeah, with the FCC, Apple can basically embargo the submissions so they don't show up early. And occasionally we have flubs where stuff does come up prematurely, like we saw the 13-inch MacBook Pro appear the day before or whatever, the week before. But in general, the FCC locks this stuff down and they only get the FCC submissions only get released the same day that the phones come out or whatever. But for whatever reason, it doesn't seem like Apple's able to do that with the EEC because we now have a 3-year history of stuff appearing on that list and then coming out within a couple of months later. This week, we saw them register 50 model identifiers on the database.
Yes.
Most of them were not new, however, because the listings say the hardware description, and it's normally quite vague. It's like portable wearable device, i.e. Apple Watch, but then say Apple Watch. And then it would say running, and then it would say the software version. So, and most of the ones that were submitted this week were all of Apple's current lineup just submitted again with the OS version bumped. So you had, like, the iPod Touch came up on the database, but it was just the same iPod Touch running iOS 13 now.
Which is called a media player of the Apple brand.
Yeah, they called it, like, Apple Media Player, which was, it threw me initially, but luckily when you Google the model identifier, it came up saying, ding, 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 it's the current iPod Touch. Mm-hmm. However, there were a few new model IDs in there. The iPhone 11s are definitely in that list, but we actually saw them submitted back in May originally. At the time, they were submitted saying they were running iOS 12, but that's just, that happened before. I don't know why they do that, but they just appear saying the current OS, and then they come back a few months later saying OS plus one. I don't know why it happens, but they do, so that now they're up to date. There were a few new MacBook Pro model identifiers come up, which presumably will turn out to be 16-inch MacBook Pro, probably. Well, technically, it only says portable Mac, or it says portable Apple laptop, but we presume it's the MacBook Pro line. So that's coming at some point, as we all expect. But the most interesting one for our discussion at the moment is the watches. Again, they had updates from watchOS 5 to watchOS 6 for all of the current lineup, including Series 3, which suggests that the Series 3 watches are going to continue to be sold this holiday season. And they had four new model identifiers, which was 2156, 2157, 2092, and 2093. And they're wholly new. We haven't seen those before at all. So that is where it comes to the discussion of the new watches. If you see how the numbers are grouped together, like 56, 57, 92, 93, that likely means that they're just 40mm and 44mm versions. And because there isn't another, because there isn't eight, because there's only four, I'm assuming they're all cellular models. So they all have cellular. So we're looking at a new 40mm watch and a new 44mm watch that are offered in cellular only. And that sounds like an addition to me, which would then be the titanium and ceramic editions.
Yeah, in the current lineup, it's that all the aluminum models have GPS only options or GPS plus cellular, so you have a choice there. And then in the stainless steel lineup, you, and when ceramic was a thing with the Series 3, you couldn't get a stainless steel or ceramic watch without cellular. So it was always part, it was baked into the price. Yeah, I mean, I could see that, and that's pretty telling because it can mean a few things. I think you've probably got a pretty good, like, direct interpretation of what this means. I've had a different theory from before this data, but it does sound like you said, ceramic, titanium in two sizes, so two materials, two sizes. And that doesn't suggest a Series 5 watch to me. It doesn't suggest the fact that you don't have like a bunch of new models and different, you know, a bunch of new numbers that you know, and some in the same material. That it doesn't sound like we're going to get a Series 5. Like, this is a new aluminum Series 5. This is a new steel Series 5. This is a new ceramic. This is a new titanium. So what's your guess based on this and overall on what the lineup for the watch looks like, you know, I guess next month?
Yeah, so the Series 3 being updated to say it's going to ship with 6 heavily implies they're going to keep selling it. And there is this is where we're moving from exacts to guesswork a bit, because that's
totally,
the Eurasian Commission does not exactly specify model numbers or places where it's going to be sold, right? Even so, theoretically, they could sell the Series 3 only in some countries, maybe the countries which don't have cellular still, for instance, or it could just be in general the Series 3 is still on sale. So, presuming that even in the US the Series 3 remains around, I think we're heading into a lineup which is purely price reductions and then some color refresh, and the color refresh includes the two new case finishes, which would be titanium ceramic. But I don't think we're going to see, personally, I don't think we're going to see any internal hardware changes to Series 3 or Series 4. They'd just be maybe like $50 cheaper or something. Maybe they'd just stay around at the same prices. And this, not only from the Eurasian Commission leak, but just in general, we've been talking about this, you know, in the last few months. There aren't Apple Watch rumors that nail down features of any kind. So it doesn't seem like they're going to go all the way to Series 5 unless they randomly called the, unless they did something really, because it'd be really weird if they introduced Series 5 titanium ceramic watches only, because they'd be so expensive and they'd what, have a faster processor and they'd just carry on with the rest of the Series 4 lamp as it is.
That would be such a big shift from what they've done so far, which is the material differences are what make up the cost differences, but you don't have to spend $600 to have an Apple Watch of the current Apple Watch that you can always get one for around $400. Yeah,
it just seems so out of whack with the normal.
It would be like if they only did new iPhones in stainless steel with OLED screens, and they just didn't have anything at the sub-$1,000 price, which they haven't done that yet.
Yeah. So that doesn't really fly. To me, all the signs are pointing to essentially no update this year, just color changes, price update, and to, you know, whet some people's appetites, you've got new edition models, which essentially are filling in the gap in the lineup from last year. Right, because there were no edition Series 4 before.
Yeah, if you had a Series 3 ceramic Apple Watch, then you had to choose, you know, and you wanted an upgrade for new features and everything. And there wasn't a clear upgrade unless you just happened to like the stainless steel options or like the new gold stainless steel option. So this would be just filling in the gap that they left last year. And it's like, so I think it's kind of nice to not have a Series 5 this year if it's just speed boost, because every year they've had, now we've added GPS, now we've added cellular, now we have a redesign and an ECG. So they've had something besides it's faster now. And so we've never had it's faster Apple Watch update. And we have so many rumors about next year, you know,
apart from the Series 1.
Yeah, which was like a course correct. It was just like just to continue having a functional watch that could run future software.
It's like we needed a cheaper watch as well as the new watch, but the first gen Apple Watch was way too slow, so we gave you this one instead.
It was too slow and it was brand new, so we're fixing that, which is a really clever thing to do. That's why I feel so certain that, like, you know, you don't have to have a Series 5 this year if all the things that we hear about next year, like there's different rumors from different sources, but you know, some of it's reporting, some of it's supply chain stuff, some of it's just rumors, but you know, things like sleep tracking as soon as 2020, micro LED screen versus the current OLED screen from every Apple Watch so far, which could have its own benefits and as soon as 2020, you know, things like that. You know, you could do a speed boost update and then you'd have a lot of people buy watches this year that wouldn't buy the you know, the version with you know, much more stuff for several more years. So by not doing one yet, even if it's just like a color refresh, those are the people that, you know, it helps the watch market stay okay. Like, and they give out the numbers, so you don't have to worry about like year over year growth, and it's in a category of other devices, so it's not specific to the watch, and the watch it still sells well.
If speed boosts are the only thing on the table as a potential improvement, mm-hmm. They're going to sell more, in my opinion, if they just reduce the price of the current lineup by, you know, $40, $50 versus keeping the prices the same and putting, you know, a faster processor in there and nothing else, because people aren't going to be excited by that. Like, it doesn't have the same appeal as going underwater, going in cellular, doing all this stuff that you couldn't do before. And sleep tracking was definitely the feature that seemed to be the most eminent as the next thing for them to tackle, right? But it seems like that's not happening until next year, so that's not on the table. So if you just have the same watches but $50 cheaper, you're probably going to sell more. You're probably going to have a bigger holiday season for the watch if you do that versus keeping them as they are with a, you know, a slight speed boost.
That's true, because people, it's like the feature this year is the price has gone down, and it went up with Series 4 from where it was, right?
Yeah.
And so it has room to go back down, and that's the new feature this year, is that the watch has a different price than it had last year for every model. I've been thinking, like, you definitely want to price drop the Series 3 whenever it becomes, like, it's into its third year on the market. That maybe Series 4, it would be okay to not change the price. And maybe they only change the price of the aluminum models and all of the steel models stay the same. You know, there's lots they could do there.
Or they only change the price on the Series 3 and keep the Series 4 as they are.
Yeah, that's what I think is more likely. Because you still want to hold the price point for the Series 5, and you don't want it, you know, you could lower it now, get those sales, bring it back up next year. We've seen with the Apple Watch that they can definitely play with the price, you know, year to year. Yeah, there's lots of things they could do. The thing that I've envisioned for this year, as I've been writing, you know, I wrote a story a month ago. It's like, does Apple Watch need a Series 5 this year? And it's clear that they don't for several different reasons. You know, people still buy watches today without a refresh. It's the same for iPhone, but, you know, just because there's a holiday, it will have a boost in sales. There's no competition, that kind of thing. And the fact that they've been rolling out Series 4 in different countries throughout the year, just like because of ECG, like the first watch, you know, it's been a slow rollout. And then, you know, like you mentioned before, like certain countries can't have LTE.
Yep.
Or they've only had it, you know, for a few months at most. And so that only lets them have aluminum models because they don't have non-cellular stainless steel models. So there's a lot of like there's still a lot of runway for this Series 4 to continue
without it being Apple. Yeah, it's blinkered to just look at the US situation.
Right, exactly.
Because even in the UK, we have cellular options, but it's not every carrier, right? The US is very rare in that you have all four of the main carriers offering Apple Watch plans. But even here in the UK, you know, you get two carriers, but they're like my preferred carrier doesn't have an Apple Watch option even if I wanted to go cellular on it. So, you know, that's the kind of expansion they can continue doing is just adding new carriers, adding this. And they front loaded the design change and they gave a speed boost last year with the Series 4. That there's still a lot of runway on the current design as we know it. Like no one's begging for the Series 4 to change at the moment, apart from tech geeks that really like us that would love to see new features. But then you look at the rumor roadmap and it just doesn't support it.
Yeah, the one case I can make is like I've seen people mention to me on Twitter whenever I discuss this on Twitter is I've had the Series 2 for a while. I've had the Series 3 for a while and I want to get the next watch. I want to upgrade every 2 years or upgrade whenever there's a big deal of a change. And they say, I want the Series 5 this year, you know, and I bet if I engaged further and said, well, what if it's just a speed boost? And then the Series 6 a year later is sleep tracking, but you know, different screen type and that brings different features. You know, would you regret it next year? And probably the answer would be yes. So as long as you're not using like a series, first generation where you can't use the latest software, then I don't think it's too bad. But the thing that I've like envisioned, you know, prior to the EEC database story, which gives us a little bit more information, is that, you know, one option would be for Apple to upgrade the Series 3 processor, change nothing else about it. So it's just, it's faster than it was before. So, for example,
would it be as fast as the Series 4 is, or would it be still in between?
Yeah, it would be like the Series 1 and Series 2 whenever the first generation went away. The Series 1 had the same speed as the Series 2. It just didn't have GPS. That was the difference there. You know, aside from like more water resistance, the processor was the same speed. So in this case, because it is the third year of Series 3, you know, it might be getting long in the tooth. I don't use one, so I don't know. But maybe it doesn't run as well on watchOS 6. Certainly not as well on watchOS 7. So that it would make sense to give that watch, you know, from 2 years ago, last year's processor, and then keep the Series 4 unchanged. So then you've got a new lineup, really, for the, you know, versus last year, but they're all healthy watches. They're all, you know, the same speed. There's vastly different feature sets with fall detection and ECG and the screen design. So you choose there, but it's all the same speed. So there's no difference of this one's going to be slower. This one's going to be, you know, might not run watchOS 7 or 8. You know, it would be, this is a 2019 lineup. They all have the same speed. They can all run the same software updates in the future and maybe not even give it a new name. Maybe just call it Series 3 second generation or something like that. I don't know. And then leave Series 4 unchanged, add new case materials at the, you know, the high end so that you've got, new options there for people who are very enthusiastic like me. But, you know, that isn't evidenced by the EEC unless they just didn't change the model number or two. But I think that would require a model number change or some, you know, some sort. I think that would be neat too. But maybe the Series 3 chip just isn't so bad that you need to take that step. Because it would be like the Series 1, Series 2, you know, year where you literally took the watch from the year ago and you just changed the speed of it, you know, and got rid of that one.
If you just imagine when last year when we went from Series 3 to Series 4, Series 4 was faster, but it was definitely the smaller jump compared to earlier years. Like, it wasn't night and day.
I can't say because I don't go back and, like, compare because I always feel like it's gradual. It's like
Yeah, but when you got the Series 2, it was, like, obviously faster, right?
People said that about, but people still said Series 2 was slow.
Yeah, and then Series 3, people said it was a lot faster as well.
Yeah.
But I don't think you got the same impression with the 4. And some of the 4 speed is wasted on, well, not wasted, but it's used for rendering more pixels and that kind of thing. So it kind of feels like the 3 and the 4 processor are closer in line than any other Delta year. Mm-hmm. So it reduces the need. They're not so far out of step, in my view. And it's, you know, Apple's not afraid to just leave the product running as it is.
That's true. And we've not seen them drop any other Apple Watch except for the first generation yet. So like Apple Watch Series 1 and Series 2, which have the same processor speed, they can all run watchOS 6. Maybe that they start falling off, you know, in future years soon, but we haven't seen it yet except for the first generation watch, which is reasonable. It got up to watchOS 4, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And then not 5. So yeah, that was kind of my guess, and EEC doesn't back that so much, but I think that would be nice. And we've also seen a history of Apple doing that. Like, they take the iPhone 5 and 5S, tweak it a little bit to make it, you know, cheaper to make, and then they put a new chip in it and they call it iPhone SE. We've seen the iPad mini have the same design for like years, and they've just given it a new processor and you know, tweak the screen a little bit and give it a new number.
Some years, the only change to the iPad mini was they added Touch ID and a gold color, and that was it. And they kept the same processor as the year before.
That's true. The iPad Air 2 is, it's not the iPad Air. It's the old iPad Pro with some changes to the, you know, specs. But yeah. So they've got a history of like taking the chip, change the design, changing the chip out, and it's a new product. But I don't know what you'd call it, you know, Series 3S. I don't know. It's that's awkward too.
Issue is just it sounds like so much work for so little gain. It's like just take $50 off the Series 3 price and just keep selling it. Just keep the production line going. Don't bother with anything. There you go. It's cheaper. Go and buy it for Christmas.
Yeah. The only thing I think is that if you took the price of the Series 3, which is already lower, and you made a bigger delta between Series 3, Series 4, then you're really encouraging people to go Series 3 if they're price conscientious. And then you're going to have more of those customers that are buying new stuff that won't be supported as long, maybe. But they can do whatever they want. So we'll see. But it seems like super clear that there's not going to be a Series 5 this year. And it's going to be next year. Series 5 will be next year's watch. And it'll have sleep tracking. It'll have the new screen type and whatever benefits come with that. Right. And, you know, maybe speed boost.
Yeah. Yeah, we're definitely not on a Series 5 trajectory.
Right. And I will totally pre-order and you know, have as soon as possible as a 44mm ceramic Apple Watch edition if it's Series 4. It's totally okay with me because that's what I wanted from the start. Didn't buy it with Series 2 or Series 3. I had Series 3 in gray and then exchanged it for the space black color because I thought that just looked nicer. But I will totally buy it even if it's, and because I can sell the Series 4s and the gold version if I want to. So I'll be there, and then you can keep using your aluminum Series 4 like a normal person. So
yeah, I'll be sticking on the train for another year.
Yep. And this week, actually just today as we're recording, Mark Gurman at Bloomberg had his like Apple September event preview, you know, what he expects, which included some new reporting, which begins with this kind of emphasizing like what we've been saying, which is no Series 5, not based on reporting, but just on, like, you know, reading the tea leaves. He says that there'll be a focus on software and new cases for the watch, which seems to imply no Series 5, just, you know, new colors of the Series 4, or new cases of the Series 4. By the way, if you wanted to refresh the Series 4 as well, like say you take away stainless steel, you replace it with titanium, that's a refresh. You add ceramic at the top, that's a refresh. And then you change the aluminum colors from silver, space gray, and gold. And instead of those three colors, you use whatever the new 10R replacement colors are, which I think is you know, you'd have like white, which would be, I think white would be the same as silver. You'd have black, which is like the iPhone 7 color, right? So it's darker than space gray.
Yeah. Yellow. Green. That's the new one, apparently.
The new green color, which we think replaces blue.
Yeah. And there was a lavender potentially on the table.
Lavender, which might replace coral.
Yeah.
And then red.
And red.
Yeah, which would be pretty sweet. So that you can have a product right off the watch. If you did that, which is like I wrote in my Series 4 review, by the way, those aluminum colors are kind of getting old looking to me, even with the new design. Give those new colors. Or like they would be limited to the Nike Plus version. They'd be like silver and face gray and Nike Plus. And then in the regular non-Nike Plus version, you get all these colors, you know?
Yeah, add a new band lineup, obviously, to go along with it.
Yeah. I wonder what the Hermes watch becomes if they take away stainless steel. It would, I presume, titanium if it's a replacement. Or would if stainless steel still exists and titanium joins in at a higher end, then does the Hermes watch get even more expensive with the band plus material combination? Yeah. Is it, for a non like new watch year, the changes are interesting.
Yeah,
what they could do. So anyway, that's what Gurman has to say about the watch this year. Focus on software, new cases.
Yeah, so essentially, Bloomberg can't come up with any new features for the watch either, which again just supports the no Series 5 narrative.
Yeah, and I just want to not to brag or anything, but I want to say like we've been on this train for a long time. Like I think it's becoming popular to talk about like in the last couple of weeks or so, but we've definitely been on this for like over a month now. So
when the Quo report came out in like February, and it was saying, here's what's coming for the watch this year, ceramic and ECG to more countries. We were coming up with it then. It's like, well,
yeah,
no, maybe there's not a big change coming for the watch this year. And then there was the sleep tracking report for the 2020 thing, and that just kind of started the kindling the fire of it. And
yeah,
it definitely seems to be where we're headed.
Not to say like, hey, look what we said, you know, et cetera, but whenever I hear someone say prominently, I haven't heard anyone say this before. It kind of irks me when it's like we're over here every week saying things, you know.
Indeed.
I know we're speaking to an audience.
Investing in the stock market can be confusing and daunting. Brokers make it super easy to invest in pretty much anything these days. But who knows where to start? If you have spare funds to invest, but are otherwise overwhelmed by the jargon and rigmarole involved, consider using My Wall Street. My Wall Street offers a short list of stock investment ideas recommended by their teams of experienced investors. They are not a broker. You cannot buy stocks through them. They are an independent investment advice vehicle. They act as an investing companion, offering short lists of thoroughly researched stocks that they believe have significant growth potential. And at the end of the day, it's up to you to decide what to invest in based on their independent advice. The My Wall Street app guides you through the whole process from getting started with a broker to building and managing a diversified portfolio. My Wall Street helps you take the first steps in the world of investing and guides you towards making educated decisions across your life. They show you how you can invest, what you can, and when you can. Happy Hour listeners can access the entire My Wall Street app for free and give it a try for 30 days, extending the normal 7-day trial period. Visit mywallstreet.com/happyhour to download the app and access stock picks and expert investing guidance. That's spelt mywallst.com/happyhour. After your trial, you can continue your investing journey for $9.99 per month. Check out My Wall Street today at mywallst.com/happyhour.
Tell me about what Mark has to say about the iPhone 11 Pro, whatever.
Yeah, he doesn't specifically say iPhone 11 Pro. He just says the new Pro iPhones, like with Pro in quotes. But I think it's going to be iPhone 11 and iPhone 11.
And he's a little bit looser on Twitter, too.
Yeah. He's clearly on the Pro bandwagon, but he's not committing to putting the number on it. But I can't see Apple not dropping the number this year. So I'm going to keep calling it iPhone 11 Pro for the time being, which is the two OLED models. And that gets a triple camera. The new iPhone 11, which is the XR successor, goes to dual camera. That's the summary. Plus, he has some information on what the cameras are going to do. So, for the triple camera system, he says that the lenses will be able to take three images simultaneously, which is impressive, to be honest, and kind of fuse them together, especially as they're all going to be at different apertures and focal lengths, because you've got ultra-wide, you've got the wide-angle, and you've got the 2x zoom telephoto. I'm not entirely sure how they managed to fuse all these together into one image, but he says it's going to happen, and he says it will result in higher resolution pictures and a significant improvement to the light photography. And I think it's fair to say that the number one place where the iPhone falls behind the competition at the moment is in the low light department, whether that's just raw photos or with like a night sight mode where you have to wait and pause and it draws in more light, like we see the Google Pixel Herald. in both regards, the iPhone definitely comes last in almost every like low light test for camera quality. When you're in the daytime, they become a lot closer together, but the XS definitely lacks in the low light department. So,
which is not to say like, the iPhone got worse, because it used to be like low light was a very high point of the iPhone camera versus what other smartphones were doing. It's just that other smartphones got better, whether it's through. I guess what happened is not like there's a certain set of lenses on the market that they can choose from unless they create their own. But it's what other smartphones did through computation that made them better, right? And it's not that iPhone got worse, it's that iPhone is kind of getting stagnant on low light.
Yeah, the market outpaced much better. For sure.
Yeah.
Especially with the night sight modes that make even the original Google Pixel from like 2016, it even makes that take very, very good night shots compared to, you know, the $1,000 iPhone. So hopefully we get a big improvement there. It doesn't necessarily call out they're going to do a night mode, but, you know, in the ideal case, you wouldn't need a night mode. You just take a picture, and if it's dark, it can sort it out and let you adjust the brightness and make it really bright if you really want to. So, and maybe the three camera system will enable them to do that, so that you don't need a dedicated night mode, or maybe there is a dedicated night option that you can switch into. We don't know for sure. Hopefully, it'd be cool if they can do it all in one. If they have to have an extra mode, fine, but at least it'll be there. And I think that's what this low light kind of thing implies. The high resolution thing is interesting as well, because from Quo and other sources, we still believe the megapixels of the lenses are not changing. It's still 12 megapixel lenses on all three. Hmm. So the fact that he specifically says higher resolution definitely implies like computational photography smarts, right? Of them mixing that together to get a higher detailed final image. Plus, he mentions all of the stuff, like the smart frame stuff, where it will be able to change the crop and not lose information and rotation and that kind of stuff, which we've talked about before. But the resolution stuff's interesting. He also makes a big deal about the video capabilities and how Apple's going to add like real-time video editing and adjustments. So when you're shooting a video with an iPhone XS, while it's recording, you can basically just zoom in and out. You just pinch and zoom, but that's it. Apparently, they're going to go way beyond that with the iPhone 11 Pro, at least, where you'll be able to reframe, crop, apply filters, apply effects, adjust the brightness, all this stuff while you're shooting, which will be interesting to see, because the Photos app in iOS 13 adds a lot of video editing features inside an Apple app for the first time inside of Photos. Like, you can rotate video now, but obviously on all the current phones that happens after the video has been saved to your library. And it sounds like they're going to take those kind of adjustments and make them be able to adjust while you're shooting as well, which would be cool. Mm-hmm. And then he mentions that the A13 chip will obviously be inside the phones. You know, no surprise there. But it will have like a Matrix coprocessor. So obviously the current one has the neural engine. It sounds like they're going to have another one for this year that will help them with certain tasks. That probably implies, well, maybe they'll keep with what is Bionic this year, isn't it? Right, they call it Bionic.
Yeah, I've had A11 Bionic and A12 Bionic. Yeah,
they had Fusion and then they went to Bionic. Mm-hmm. If they're adding a new coprocessor, they'll probably make a big deal about how many transitions it's got and probably give it a new name. So it might not be Bionic again this year. And then on the high end phone, so not the 10R replacement, there will be at least some colors having a matte finish, because we've heard about this kind of frosted glass matte rumor before. The way that Mark writes it, it kind of implies that not every color will be matte, and there may still be some colors that are glossy, if you see what I mean, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think Quo was the first to say that there'd be a frosted glass change this year.
Yeah, Mac Attacker said it, and a few others said it as well.
Yeah, and no one said like it will be, you know, OLED phones will have frosted glass and LCD phones won't. But maybe what Mark's saying was, you know, I guess that's one more way to make the, I can see all of them being frosted glass. It's like they're all the new phones. Or if you want to distinguish between the two, you know, even more, say the higher end ones are frosted and the other ones are not, and make that a difference. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he also mentions multi-angle Face ID. Specifically, the quote is multi-angle, and you'll be able to like unlock your phone even when it's flat on the table, which is definitely an issue on the current phones, because you do have to like lean over the phones quite a lot for it to be able to see you. So apparently this new Face ID system will have a much wider range to be able to pick you up, which would be, you know, a nice improvement. We previously heard from Ming-Chi Kuo that they would be upgrading the infrared sensor, so it would be more powerful, the flood illuminator, such that it would be able to block out more infrared rays from the environment, like the sun. So if you're in heavy sunlight, you're more likely to be able to unlock. But the kind of wider angle field of view thing is new information. So that's a surprise, to be honest. Like, it kind of sounded like they weren't going to do anything big to Face ID this year, but this certainly sounds like they're heading that direction. And Google made a big deal about the their upcoming, because they're going to have the Pixel 4 this fall, and in classic Google fashion, they've started announcing features of it already for whatever reason. And one of the, they're doing some kind of
nothing,
like...
Nothing to lose.
Yeah. Yeah. They're doing some kind of like radar system to improve facial recognition, supposedly. That's what they've announced. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, that stacks up against the new Face ID infrastructure as well.
Yeah. And when they moved from the iPhone to the iPhone XS, they didn't call it like Face ID 2 like they did with Touch ID, where they kind of call it like second generation, did they?
No.
They just said it was faster.
They just said it was faster,
and,
yeah.
And we kind of connected that to being part of the chip, made it faster, and then later in software, all Face ID improved for everybody. Maybe they would call this out as second generation Face ID, you know, like they've done it with Touch ID in the past. So.
Yeah. And then the other interesting point from the iPhone section was he called out that Apple is focusing on like durability, so there will be much higher degrees of water resistance and shatter resistance for like the back glass. And it's, you know, especially on the water resistant thing, it's like, what is that for? Because none of the manufacturers of phones, Apple included, will back up their water resistance claims with warranties. Like, nobody covers water damage, so it's hard to market a now this phone is really, really water resistant or slash waterproof, but we don't.
Unless they change their policy on replacing one.
That would be quite unusual though, because not, you know, phones don't really have that. So.
Yeah. I mean, that the feature itself is nice, so that you have like fewer actual needs to replace the phone where like water got in and damaged it. I guess the big thing right now is that it can take, it can take longer for the water to become a problem for the most part.
Yeah.
In shallow water and with splashes. But it's still sort of in that splash-proof territory versus, like, you know, the really tricky thing here, like, I agree with you about warranties, but the really tricky thing is, like, any level of water resistance, and people call it waterproof. It's like, that's what it is, you know. Water resistance is, like, the subcategory, like a lesser version. Splash-proof is pretty friendly to say, but, like, you know, when you get into the rating systems, it's you know, it's impossible to memorize, and no one knows that without referencing it. So people just say waterproof, and that's not what it is, you know. So and then people will damage their phones by taking underwater pictures for way too long and things like that. And so if they improve it, like you say, like it's more, you know, they did that with the 10S, didn't they? The 10S is more water resistant than the 10R and the iPhone 10 were.
Yeah, that is correct actually, but I don't think they even mentioned it. They just.
They did the beer slide where social was like, our team loved testing this, and they had this crazy picture of, like, the iPhone in a beer mug. Or
yeah, that's true actually. So yeah, you're right. They did mention it.
Yeah. So maybe they just keep going down that road. But like, I kind of agree with you, where until you change the warranty of it, like, oh, it's water damaged. And that shouldn't have happened. like that's what you can do with the watch, is you can't go diving with the watch, but since the Series 2 and on, it's rated for swim tracking. Like, you can use it in a pool in an ocean.
Yeah, down to they have 50 meter depths.
Right. So if you can bring that to the phone eventually, I think they use a different rating system or something, where it's not like step one, step two. It's not clear how it's labeled, but I don't think like the iPhone is like the first generation watch was, or the Series 1 watch was. I think that's lesser. So maybe if they catch up with any of that, it will be okay.
Yes. Because if they could put their money where their mouth is and actually, you know, warranty cover it, then it'd be really cool if you could do like underwater photography and actually have it not be, oh, your phone might break when you do this. But if that was actually a supported feature, especially with triple camera system, you know, that'd be very cool when you take underwater video and you're in the pool when you're playing about. But it just seems unlikely, because there's so much, like, there's so many problems with letting someone claim auto damage on their phone, because it's really hard to tell how deep you went with the water. Mm-hmm. And you know, one piece of water is not another piece of water. You can have salt in the water, you can have chlorine. There's all this gumph that just gets in the way, which is why none of the manufacturers will cover you for it. But if you're going to keep pushing down the water resistance levels, at some point, you know, you have to stand up behind it to be able to promote features. Because it'd be a cool iPhone ad if you had someone like taking a video on the beach and then they like jump in the sea with them. Like, that'd be a cool ad, and it would sell phones. Yeah. But there's quite a big leap for them to actually be able to like advertise that. So
yeah, people already do things like that, and they don't know what level of water resistance is there and what's safe. And like I've done things like dip the top end of my phone underwater in like clear creek water to take a cool picture, like only once, just to like try it. And I kind of got the feeling that like other iPhones could have done that too and been safe in that scenario, before like water resistance was added. But, they had that one ad where there was a kid on a bicycle and he was in his garage and he was about to go for like a ride. And it was the first time they added water resistance. And he went out in like a crazy thunderstorm with his iPhone like mounted to his bike, because like the, you know, I guess like tracking a bike workout of some kind in like a thunderstorm. But I don't think what they showed there, I don't think they'd encourage. So maybe if they get to a level where you can do things like jump in the ocean, not people already do that, but if they can show it in an ad, and that's a good sign.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's basically the watch and the iPhone sections. Mark's report does go into some other stuff, which is interesting. So on the iPad front, he says that there will be iPad Pro updates this year, but they'll be mostly focused on processor improvements, i.e. they'll get an A13X or whatever. And they'll also get the same triple camera system as the new high-end iPhones do. And Mac Attackera previously talked about this. We talked about this on the show before. So those the three lenses and stuff will come to the iPad Pros as well, which is kind of funny, because obviously the iPad Pros have gone from one camera to three.
Yeah, is Mark saying this fall for that or next year?
He said soon, basically. So okay. It didn't 100% say. It was like as soon as this year, so it was a bit waffy, but it's not like definitive on the exact launch times for the iPad Pros.
Like we're definitive about a new iPhone coming this year, but we're not on the iPad front.
Yeah, and there have been some reports, not from Bloomberg, but from some shakiest places, that there wouldn't be an iPad Pro refresh until the spring, for instance, right. And it would come with like 5G and stuff. So
yeah, I think we discussed that.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe that is true. The way it was written, it did sound like it was coming soon. So I has put it on the radar of expectation. And he definitely said this next one, which is that the 9.7-inch iPad is going away and being replaced by the rumored 10.2-inch iPad. That's been a rumor for like the entire of this year. And originally we thought the 10.2-inch was coming in March, and then no, that was actually the 10.5. But then Coin, the good old anonymous Coin account, said 10.2-inch is still coming. And sure enough, it sounds like this full period, the 10.2 inch will become the new entry level iPad for everyone. So that's the cheap $349 iPad level.
Yeah, which we've totally discussed on the show, because I would ask you things like, well, if you've got 10.5 and 7.9 inch and 9.7 inch, what can a 10.2 iPad do? And I think from the start you'd say, well, you replace 9.7 with 10.2 and it doesn't have the same features, you know, as nice of features, newer processor as the iPad mini and iPad Air 2. It's still in that, you know, $329 area. Mm-hmm. In terms of like what you get for that, it's a good value, but it's not the best iPad or even like the medium iPad.
Yeah, and there is some symbolism, because obviously, the 9.7-inch iPad was the first iPad, right? The iPad 2010 was 9.7-inch screen, and it seems like that is about to be doomed, and we'll no longer have a 9.7-inch iPad.
iPads, aside from the latest Pros, still look like that iPad in terms of like the design. Like, you don't have any that have the same shape exactly, but that iPad shape inspired the iPad Mini. The iPad Mini inspired the shape of the iPad Air. And then it wasn't until you got to the iPad Pro that third generation iPad Pro in terms of the if you look at the 12.9 inch, that you got this wholly new shape, you know, or like losing all the bezel, basically, or a lot of the bezel. It will be symbolic. It was the iPad 4 that really took, like, lost the first generation shape with side bezels as well as top bezels. And it was the iPad 2 that redesigned the iPad in terms of, like, the back and sides and everything. So, yeah, it's been a long time coming. I think this is not like a, wow, they're really moving fast and getting rid of that original size. It's like, it's been a long time coming for sure. And there's still, you know, close relatives of that original size and shape.
Yeah. And finally, Mark has concrete information on a new HomePod entrant.
Yeah.
And we've kind of heard these murmurs for a while about maybe there'll be a HomePod update, maybe it'll be a HomePod mini. This what Mark says is that Apple's working on a cheaper HomePod, and he specifically says it will have two tweeters inside, and the current HomePod has seven in a like 360 degree arrangement, because one of the big selling points of the HomePod is you get sound all the way around. It's not like a bookcase speaker where it only shoots out in one direction. And so if you go from that to only two, you have to presume that it's getting smaller, because otherwise it'd be weird for them to go to a bookcase speaker. Well, it sounds like you're just going to have a smaller HomePod that has less speakers in it, but because the surface area gets smaller, you need less speakers to still cover the full 360 degree size and volume.
Cheaper to make, fills a hole in the gap for Apple, where everyone else has a very low end product and then like a mid range product, and then some have a high end product like HomePod. This could be like the $200 Sonos One level of speaker. In that case, I think they do two tweeters, and I think it's like stacked, you know, like vertically. I think that's the same case for the. Maybe the same case for the iPad or the IKEA bookshelf speaker. But like you said, if they want to kind of maintain what a HomePod is, you could do one on either side and then claim 360 degree sound to a degree, because you've got front and back. Whereas like with that, the Sonos stuff, you've got it goes where you face it, you know, and then they do some tricky stuff in like equalization and software to make it sound better, but it's not 360 like a HomePod is. So they could have a version of that. Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously, if you look at the smart speaker market, it's clearly dominated by not even the $200 speakers. It's dominated by the $50 Dots and Google Home Minis, right? The Amazon Echo Dot and the Minis. They're by far the biggest sellers, especially around Christmas time. And it doesn't say either way, but it certainly doesn't sound like Apple's going to be going that low market with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've lowered the price of the HomePod from $350 to $300. And over last weekend, we passed the point on the calendar where the HomePod has outlasted the iPod Hi-Fi on the market. Like, iPod Hi-Fi had so many days on the market. It was like a year and a half. It was very short-lived. HomePod, it got a price drop, but it's also outlived the number of days on the market. So it's not going away. They're bringing it to new markets, like even this month and next month. So they're still rolling it out. But it's 300 instead of 350 now. You could see this one being 200, 150, 180.
Yeah, it has to be at least, it has to be 200 or less, right? Because 250 is pointless. So
exactly. Yeah. And for two tweeters versus seven, that gives you a good idea of the difference in sound quality and what they can achieve. So, and I mean, that's a pretty big difference there. So,
yeah, I'd hope they're aiming for a 150 level.
That'd be sweet. I mean,
I feel like that's where they need to be.
They sell Apple TV 4K for 150, right? And that's something that it's not huge, but people do buy
they
it.
They don't sell Apple TV 4K for 150.
They don't. No,
they sell Apple TV HD for 150.
Okay, they sell the Apple TV 4K for even more.
For 179,
For 180 and 200. For 32 and 64 gigabyte.
Yeah. But generous Apple still selling the HD Apple TV.
But where I'm going with that, it even makes my point even more, which is that those are kind of wild prices and people balk at the price, but they still buy it because it does something for them. And so if you had a HomePod at 150 to 200 range, you know, it would be in more homes than the current HomePod is, I'd say.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And if you're like me and I've got two HomePods in my office that I use in stereo.
Mm-hmm.
I love the HomePod, I really do, but you know, I'm not going to spend $350 for these speakers everywhere in the house. I'd probably have room for maybe like one more.
Like nobody needs that sound, like maybe on like one, like a stereo pair per floor. But I've written so much about this and like my thoughts on it. But like it's unreasonable to think that people want a 300 to $350 bigger in every room of the house, you know, within like case it was within voice activation range and like hearing it well.
Yeah. And like my kitchen, let's say you've never had unlimited money. The current kitchen in the house does not really have room for a HomePod size speaker. Mm-hmm. It could fit one that was a lot smaller. It could certainly fit like an Echo Dot or something, but there's not really a shelf for an actual HomePod to go. So yep. I want to stay in the HomePod ecosystem, you know, they need a mini form factor to exist.
Yeah. The market solution is kind of right now to use an AirPlay 2 speaker, like something from Bose or Sonos or lots of other companies that make those. I've tested so many AirPlay 2 speakers. They're great. But the difference of having voice input from, you know, your voice assistant Siri that you use, free services that you use built in, or, you know, not built in. Built in's way better. And even like the music client, podcast client playing directly on the device versus streaming from another device to that speaker, it's just way nicer when it's built in. So HomePod would do that. And the closest thing to that now is the Alexa integration, where you've got Apple Music on Echo speakers of all sizes, and they're reaching more countries as of this week. But nothing from Apple. So this news to me is like, you don't have to say a whole lot about it. Like, you don't have to say like what colors will it be in, what will the price be. Just the existence of this thing is like it's they're moving the ball forward here, and it's tied, you know, presumably to software updates, because we know that HomePod is going to get new features like multi-user support to some degree. And then the new radio feature where you can stream lots of different radio stations, directly. So they're not just doing the software stuff, even though that's kind of behind still. They're not just lowering the price and still rolling it out in new countries for the first time. They're also going to do something that puts this in more people's homes, I think. And so I'm excited for that, you know, for HomePod. It's good news.
Good direction.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Mayo. Next up to talk about this week is the release of a handful of new beta versions of Apple software continuing to come out. So one thing we got this week was the first update to macOS Catalina this month in August. And we're now like at the end of August. We went like a long time without an update. But we got a new update to macOS Catalina for the first time, which includes a new version of Xcode separately. And then a few days later, we got updates to iOS 13 and iPadOS 13. I think we're on beta 8 there now, beta 6 for Catalina, and a new version of watchOS 6, beta 8. I think tvOS 13 stuck on beta 7 so far.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. But as we record, we've got those new betas to talk about. And there's not a whole lot to say except for that everything that's missing in the iOS 13 beta and around that those features like sharing your ETA, using announce messages with AirPods and Beats, those kind of things.
Like folder sharing.
Yeah, shortcuts,
automation
and stuff, yeah. All those things that were removed in one of the mid-cycle betas is still gone, which sort of suggests it's not going to come back in time for release, even though Apple hasn't said that yet. So it's
kind of too late at this point.
It's curious, yeah.
Yeah, the software has to be finalized for QA at, like, the start of September, and if they haven't brought any of them back
like next week
now, yeah, exactly, it's not going to happen. And realistically, they're not going to bring them back for one beta's worth of time in case there are problems. So I think what we see is what we're going to get for 13.0 now.
Yeah. And then in the home app for HomeKit on macOS Catalina, it did see some changes. And again, that's the update that came out after like 3 or 4 weeks with no new version. I'd say 3 weeks with no new version. Then it had in the home app, it got some new icons for different options. What's all there now?
Yeah. So interestingly, present in macOS Catalina, but not the iOS seed, which actually came out afterwards, are some new icons for different accessories. So in HomeKit, obviously you have a whole range of different accessories, and they have default icons, but for some of the categories, like lights, you can actually, when you edit the accessory, you can choose a different icon to better represent the kind of light that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So before you'd have like a ceiling light with a drop down, right? A normal just like light Edison bulb. Light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then a desk lamp, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so in beta 8, they've added new ones for like a square desk lamp, a kind of ceiling alcove light, which is kind of what you get in a kitchen, the little like LEDs in a circle that are in the ceiling, an LED light strip, a kind of vertical light bore, and a chandelier. Mm-hmm. So they've kind of they've gone from three to like nine. So it's quite a big rise out of nowhere. And they still only exist on macOS Kali at the moment.
Yeah,
I
think there was also a floor lamp before, and that you know that's still there. And I think in total they go from four to ten. And so if you're counting for the record, the chandelier is nice. I like that. The lamp is you know it's cool that they've got more than just like the generic like Pixar desk lamp. There's like a bookshelf speaker shaped light. I'm not sure what they're trying to represent there. And then there's like a rectangle with a slight frame around it. So,
Rectangle kind of reminds me of like a Nano Leaf canvas type thing.
Okay. Yeah. So there's definitely more options there, which is a long time coming. And people that know about the home app and HomeKit, they've been waiting for this for so long. It's still not totally representative of everything you could have, but it's a good start.
Yeah. Going from four to 10 is a big jump.
Yes. Yes.
And there's also a whole host of new icons for the outlets.
Yeah.
So you before you'd basically just have one, mm-hmm. and that'd be just like a generic outlet shape. Now they've added outlets that look like the UK plugs, that look like the European plugs, that look like the American plugs. You've got UK plugs with a little red dot on for whatever that means. I can't remember, but I've definitely seen those kind of plugs around. And you've got like proper American plugs. You've got three prong ones. So they basically just let you now localize your own app to pick the plugs that
So match is it was just always the US plug before?
Yep. It was just kind of like a generic plug.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there was no foreign options. And then they also added a new fan option, which is interesting for me because before they'd have a ceiling fan.
Which was new in Catalina iOS 13, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe so. And they had a desk fan, which is the default, the standard like big desk fan, but now they also have a tower like standing fan,
standing floor fan, right?
So yeah, and as we talked about last week, I just rigged up a Homebridge standing fan, so that's technically more accurate than what I have so far. So
yeah, which you published the tutorial on, right? Then
if you're actually interested in that, there's the Homebridge Broadlink big tutorial that I wrote if you're looking for step-by-step instructions and how to do something like with infrared accessories.
Yeah. There's one more that isn't in our story, which is the power strip. If you have like circuit protector style power strip with multiple outlets on it, before it was just a plug icon and then you had a plug icon for each one. And now that the product gets its own like power strip, I guess it's US plug, but it now has its own plug there too, or icon there too. And they all animate more than before. So like the fan, which used to only be the desk size fan, would spin when it's on and not when it's off. When they added the ceiling fan, same thing. It looks like kind of like a propeller spinning. Same thing for the standing fan. But now all the lights animate as well. Whenever you assign that icon, or whenever you if you make a change,
you like toggle it on or off.
Yeah, they kind of glow like if they come on, which is more than just like off on static, one state, the other state. Now it's got this like kind of charming animation. So that's cool. it's weird right now that this isn't Catalina and they're not on iOS yet, because if you assign them on Catalina, you see them reflected yet on iOS, and you can't assign them from iOS, but presumably the development train is just not all on the same line yet. And it will merge before these are released, we presume. But there's something that we've been talking about, I guess, like between us for a while, and maybe a little bit on Twitter, but there's a big change to the way that the home app handles single accessories. I think you might have even mentioned a little bit on the show too, but in the early beta days, where now it's like, yeah, this is going to stick around. I finally got to write about it this week, which is that the way that the home app groups accessories that are one product but has like two or more different types of, sensors or accessories inside of it. It used to be a little bit more sane, and now it's grouped together in a way that makes it less cluttery and maybe easier to shredding out. But it's also harder to just get information quickly or control accessory quickly, in a way that I think is pretty bad. And that's a pretty big mistake. And I got a lot of feedback on the story I wrote, which is, just called Apple's Home App Takes a Step Back on iOS 13, despite having new features like secure video for HomeKit video cameras and new ways to do automation if that ships with shortcuts and things like that. The way they change grouping is just really bad. And I finally articulated what I mean by that in a story and included lots and lots of screenshot examples, like the way that my Eve degree sensor for outside temperature and humidity used to be two tiles in the home app, one with the temperature 81 degrees, one with the humidity 81% in the case of my screenshot. That becomes one tile in iOS 13 that says outside temperature, two sensors, and there's no information on that. It just
tells there's no dynamic information at all.
Yeah, and I almost need to like rename that so it'll be called temperature and humidity, I guess. I don't know. Like, what's one name that encompasses both of those things? But then you need to like, you know, long press that, open it up, and then it expands to the two, which is not a big deal. It's just like one more press and then you see it. But before, what I would do is I would have the temperature and humidity on my, you know, front door doorstep, like hyperlocal temperature and humidity in the favorite section. So the top nine tiles in HomeKit and the home app on page one. And then you can swipe down from control center or up from control center, wherever it is. And you see that information. So that I like that information. It's like, how hot and how humid will it be? Because those two in combination mean a very different thing where I live in on the Gulf Coast of Mississippi. So that's annoying. Another example is in my home office, I have an Eve room sensor, which is one product, one piece of hardware, but it tells you the air quality, which is in this case, in my screenshot, it's good. The humidity, 52%, and the temperature, which is on the warmer side for my house because of the office environment, but it's 76 degrees. On iOS 13, it says air quality because that's the first sensor in the group. And then it has air quality as the icon, which is a new icon of like a breeze. But then it says three sensors and you have to expand it to see any data. So I don't know how to name that. I don't know how to make the icon generic and not the specific one.
Because you can end up calling it sensor and then right below it's going to say three sensors.
Yeah, and I don't want to call it Eve room because that doesn't mean anything to me. And no one
it's
should,
not semantically relevant.
Yeah, like if I share my home kit access with like family and friends, like, you know, guests to come over. So that I want people to be able to look at this and like know what it is and not have to know what our brand and you know, product is. So that's bad. A worse example is that I had fun writing this. It was great venting. Is the Vocalink Flower Bud Diffuser and Mood Lamp. So it's one product, mostly meant to put scented oils in mixed with water. You can control how warm it gets to, you know, make the diffuser work and have the scent, the aroma spread about. And the higher it is, the faster the water goes away. So you choose. But it also has a mood light built in, and those are two very different things. You can tap to turn the diffuser on and off. You can long press to have a slider, so you can change from 0 to 100% with the intervals in between. And then separately, you have a tile for light. Tap it, goes on and off, or you long press it, and you pick the brightness level. Now that becomes kitchen diffuser as the tile, and has the diffuser's icon, and then below that it says 100% brightness, except brightness is truncated to dot, to bright and dot, dot, dot. So there's no like tap on and off from the favorite screen or control center now. It's like you've got to tap, hold, and expand it, and then you see the two things. And that one tile just doesn't make much sense. Like, it doesn't tell you information. So I don't like that. We talked about earlier about light strips or power strips. You know, we have like, it has like one, two, three different outlets on one power strip that goes in the wall. Those are very cool. Vocalink makes one called the PM2E. Before, it was three different tiles. You could even assign the plugs, like as with any smart plug, to be a fan, a light, or by default, a plug. And that lets you do things like tell Siri to turn off the lights, or turn off the fan, and then it knows that that outlet is actually that device. Now it's outlet A is a title and it says all on or whatever combination. That's bad. The final and worst one is the awesome Arlo Baby Cam, which is primarily a HomeKit video camera, right? Well, they had a really cool update after that HomeKit feature was added to add four sensors to that, I believe. And what you got, I think maybe five in total. You got presence. So if it detects anybody in the room, you got air quality, you got humidity, you got temperature, and then you got to control the light on the camera itself. So it's like a night light, a mood light. That doesn't truncate to one tile. It is buried in a new tile in the camera.
It basically disappears.
it goes away in a way that's like super undiscoverable unless you just know what you're looking for and you are, you know, then you're inconvenienced. But no one's going to find this for the most part. You have to launch the camera's live feed. So tap the camera icon that gives you like a screenshot, you know, a snapshot of like the last motion it caught. Then you view the live feed, which is like loads in. You've got the UI controls for like listening to volume, using the microphone. There's a new button now that lets you see like every sensor in the room or, you know, other accessory in the room. Then you can see those the sensors. Even if you favorite them, like they're part of that very tile. Like you're not going to find it. So it's really not great. I'm enjoying using the macOS Mojave home app on my MacBook Pro. Everywhere else, I've got the new version of the home app on the iPhone, the iPad, the Apple Watch.
You know, it's a bad situation when you're enjoying the Marzipan home app.
Yeah. Yeah. And I commented on like a Reddit thread a few weeks ago where someone was asking about some changes in the home app and how it was like a degraded experience. And I was like, this grouping thing is going on and it's not getting any better. And of course, it's a beta. So someone commented to say it's a beta. That Apple's going to work out these bugs before it releases. You know, stop whining and worrying about this. But these are like intentional features that Apple's like had to go out of the way to design.
It's on the iOS 13 features page. They literally say the home app now has more robust accessory controls. Like they're trying to put it as a feature.
Mm-hmm. And there are cool things like the way that a thermostat is presented now when you expand the tile is it looks more like a thermostat like in the UI versus like a light slider. So they do some cool things there, but this is not one of the cool things. This really makes me not excited about HomeKit. And to the point where I used to have the favorite screen like decked out with like glanceable information and the same thing for the control center tile. And now I just kind of want to put the home app in a folder and forget about it and just like ask Siri for that information, which you can do. That's no different there. But I used to be frequently excited about things in HomeKit, and this like single change on its own just is a worse experience that if they don't change it, then it's just, I'm just not as excited about HomeKit, you know?
Which truth is not, it's just not as good. It's like, it's as simple as that. Like it penalizes accessories that offer multiple services behind the scenes.
Yeah, which is a good thing. Yeah, it should be a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, these accessories are trying to give you more information, and the home app, like, messes it all up now. Mm-hmm. And, like, before, everything would be its own tile. Mm-hmm. And so, some people will complain, I wish I could, like, hide this or group it together. But they've gone way too far, and that now everything's grouped, and you aren't allowed to undo the grouping. So, you can't tune it to your room. Like the power strip outlet thing is a perfect example, right? Say if you have two lamps that are connected to this power strip in your living room, and there's one on the left and one on the right wall. In your head, those are not connected in any meaningful way to you. You've got one lamp here and you've got one lamp here. It shouldn't be able to be independently separated so you can control one or you can control the other or you can see both at the same time. You don't walk into your living room and go, oh, there's lamp A and lamp B that are connected via the power strip. You don't think like that. It flips on its head. It's exposing like implementation detail as the UI rather than letting you actually be more accurate to what your home would offer.
Yeah, because at the base level, like this is one product with multiple accessories inside of it, and that's I guess how HomeKit recognizes it. But you don't have to expose that to users, and by doing that, like actually doing that and designing it that way, the problem for me is what I've described so far is that information is not as glanceable and actionable without more steps required, and that's not, you know, the end of the world, but it's not better. But the thing is like, you could always control what appears on your favorite screen for like page one of the home app. You can't control like what's shown in a room, but it's also divided by the room. So like favorites is everything that you actively favorite, or if it's first added, a lot of times it'll default to favorite, then you can remove it. And people will complain like the home app, they launch it, the first screen is just got way too much stuff and it's not glanceable and it's hard to decipher, but you control that. You can hide stuff. And then you can go look at it like a room by room basis to see everything else. And they've even done things like move, like the Philips Hue hub for the smart lights used to be, you have to go to a room, and now it's at a higher level where it's just like in the home, that's a good thing.
Yeah. The hubs don't clutter up anymore. That is a positive step.
Yeah. That's a positive thing. But the way that they're grouping things is not, they should give you, if not an option, they should just use a whole nother mechanism, which is like how they do for light. So for example, I've got a standing lamp in the living room, which is, has two bulbs in it, like candle sized bulbs. And so I've got two different hue bulbs inside, and I'm never going to want to control like the top of the lamp or the bottom of the lamp individually. So using HomeKit, a feature that's been there from day one, is you can group those two lights together to be one product and like one device in home, in the home app, as living room lamp. And you can go into that in the UI and see there's two bulbs there. You can control them if individually if you wanted to, but just at a glance, it's one lamp.
And when you tap on the tile, both turn off. And when you tap on the tile, both turn on.
Right. When you change the slider, the brightness on both is controlled that way, because that's how it is in your home. And so that works. They had a whole method for that. That's still there, but they need to apply that to the way that this grouping stuff is working. But
yeah, there's no justification for grouping everything together and not letting you change the default, even. Like,
yeah.
Personally, I think the default should be everything as a separate tile and then let you tidy it up by joining stuff together afterwards. Because I feel like in most cases, that's actually what people are going to be wanting. Like the power strip, you don't want it all in one. You want it as separate things. The Arlo baby sensors.
The camera, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want this information hidden behind the camera feed. You want it being in the room. And you should be able to go out your way to make it disappear if you really, really want to. Not, oh, it's gone by default. And the stupid thing with the Eve Degree is like the perfect example. Whereas before, you had two tiles that showed you information that regularly changed. And now you've got one tile that doesn't show you any information that changes. Yeah. Like, the Eve Degree is not going to spawn a new sensor every day. It's always just going to say two sensors written on it. Like, what's the point in that? It's stupid. And yeah, no human would design it that way.
And in earlier betas, it would say the temperature. You had to expand to see humidity. And they made it worse. Like, they took away the one piece of glanceable information. And now it's zero pieces of glanceable information. So
yeah. And on top of all of this stuff, even when you do go in to see the grouped accessories, they've made some of those designs worse, in my opinion, as well. Like, you jump in on the four, you know, the four smart plugs joined together. Mm-hmm. It looks kind of bad. Like, it seems that they're using some kind of like algorithm to lay out grouped accessories. Whereas before, because each individual accessory was on its own, they would have like a human obviously design each accessory interface. Whereas now, when they're grouped together, they just kind of have to like stack, and it doesn't look good. And a lot of the times you don't even have labels. Like, you can have two lights in a group, but you don't know which light is which. It's like, there's so much messiness to it. And it's the ability to group stuff together, because before it was only lights you could group together. You couldn't group together sensors or this and that, right? It was only lights. So the functionality to group more stuff together is a good thing, but it should not be mandated that all this stuff is grouped by which the host accessory it comes from. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yep. And I've filed feedback in the feedback app, you know, a long time ago. I never got any responses to any of the feedback that I filed. I know in the early days, people were getting like fast feedback, from the feedback app, you know, I never got a single response, but I still diligently try to file the feedback request so that
yeah, you know, I think I filed about 20 feedbacks since I was 13 come out, and I've got zero response to any of them.
Yeah. Which is not, you know, that's okay. That's okay. But
at least in the old days of Radar, you get marked as dupe. Now I don't even get stuff marked as duplicate. It just sits there.
Yeah. Some of which has been fixed in later betas, but, yeah, it's a big system. It's busy. But, my point there is that when I wrote the story, you know, I had a lot of people, you know, like, I think 99% of people who read it were like, yeah, that's not better. Like, I think there were a few people who were like, well, that's the way that the API work, or, you know, the framework works. And so, yeah, it makes more sense for a developer, but, no, not for consumers. But the reason I wrote the story is that, yeah, I mean, you can file a feedback, you know, Radar or whatever. You can tweet about it. And I think that's a level, you know, that when we tweet, we have an audience. And so people, including at Apple, see that. But the biggest way for me to try and get this message up the chain is to write a story. That's the biggest audience, you know, that's the most reach I have is write a story. And so, yeah, that's what I did. I literally started out as like a screenshot and a tweet. And I was like, I could do that, but there's a lot more to explain and show and say here. So yeah, that's where it went. Final thing I'll say on this is that, the fix for this, I guess, is you don't have to use Apple's Home app to control HomeKit accessories. You know, before there was a Home app, there were third-party home apps, including an app called Home. Eve has a free app to manage Eve accessories, which there are plenty of, and they're usually pretty good. But it's a Home Kit app, so you can manage everything there too. There are very few things that are only in the home app from Apple, and there are some things that are only in third-party apps that are part of the HomeKit framework, which has always been a weird difference. But yeah, and that's kind of the fix, is like, you know, maybe find a good HomeKit app you like that isn't Apple's, if that's what this comes down to. And I've, since the home app has existed, I've kind of been like, well, that's the first party one. It can do different things. That's what I'm going to use. But this makes me think maybe I'll just try and find a good third party app if they don't change too.
Yeah, like I really liked the home app as it was in iOS 12, mm-hmm. not on the Mac, but on iOS.
Yes.
So saying just go and use a third party app is such a shame. And for instance, the home app gets special privilege in Control Center where you see your favorite accessories,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
no third party app can do that,
right?
Yeah, so you don't get any preference there. And what's really frustrating to me is this is going to get changed eventually. It's such a mirror of like the stupid change they did in iOS 12 where they got rid of the flip camera button for FaceTime. And then, oh, what a surprise, in November it came back because it was... But we were talking about it for months,
yeah,
right? It was,
yeah.
Like the, it was like every beta, has the flip camera changed? No. 12.0 ships, it's still not there. 12.1 ships, still not there. 12.1.1 ships, oh, they fixed it finally. It's yeah. like... This is going to happen here in one way or another, whether it's 1.2.
Yeah, it feels but like...
It's like, why can you not... Why has this got to this point? Like, it's clearly wrong.
Yeah, it feels like this year is going to be HomeKit in the loop for text selection.
Yeah, the text selection stuff is going to get changed as yeah. well. You can just feel it in your blood. Like, you don't need to be, like, a product designer or an engineer. You just use this stuff, and it's so blatantly not... great and yeah. and regressions from what they had before.
Yeah, very very specific things in general. It's like iOS 13 and their running updates are very exciting, and like I've been happy to run the betas, you know, all summer long.
Yep.
and you know, if you say should you upgrade, yes, as long as all your software is compatible, especially on the Mac with dropping 32-bit. But yeah, and I love things like dark mode and you know, probably lots of other things I can't think of at the moment, but that's just a big downer for me, is the way that HomeKit changed. And the final thing I'll say is that, you know, even if you look at third party apps and you find something you like there, developers can't make those for the Mac, because where there's the framework, I guess it's an API that developers can tap into make it an app for iOS and iPad before Apple made one that still exists. They've never allowed that on the Mac, even though there is a home app there.
The HomeKit framework on Mac is still private.
Yeah, and even with Catalyst, I guess that's still the case. So,
yep, it is. You can't make a HomeKit app for Mac at the moment.
Yeah, yep. So. All right, let's talk about something different, which is what's going on with Apple TV Plus. That's Apple's, you know, again, that's Apple's TV and eventually movie service, original content to kind of compete with Netflix and similar. There's some new things. So, first off, I'll just mention that last week we discussed the teaser trailer for the morning show, the morning show, with Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon, and Steve Carell. And I don't think we had a whole lot to decipher from that, but this week we...
Well, yeah, because the teaser trailer was a bit silly.
Yeah.
It didn't really show much.
Didn't show a whole lot. But this week we got like a minute and a half, 2 minute long trailer, which
like a proper trailer,
yeah, which is much more telling, and they've ramped with the marketing for that specific show like way up. I think that the nice thing about the trailer is that it shows the conflict between each character. You kind of get a sense before you knew it was kind of like the behind the scenes of the drama in the media world, you know, specifically in this case, a morning news show based on a book in 2004. But you can see how that idea is modernized for what we see in you know, news today. And then specifically for the characters, you see a conflict kind of between everybody, and how like Steve Carell's character is kind of like a shamed character, kind of a bad guy, not a villain, but just kind of the bad guy in the show. And then Jennifer Aniston kind of being the lead character is in an interesting place where Steve Carell gets fired, and then she kind of like throws him under the bus, but then his replacement is Reese Witherspoon, and then there's a conflict between Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon because she thinks that Reese Witherspoon is like the younger talent who will come and take over her show. And then Jennifer Aniston has to like reach back into Steve Carell's world and try and, you know, it's the conflicts and friendships and everything. So
yeah, Aniston's character is essentially showing the good news only, right? Like she's hiding some of the bad stuff. And then Reese's character obviously joins the show and says, oh, I look up to you so much because you tell the news how it is, you tell the truth. And clearly that's not the case. So you can see how that's going to like unravel.
Yeah. So there's lots of different elements, like, I guess the Me Too movement and just even like truth in news and everything and how it's depicted. And then just conflicts between, colleagues. So I liked that this trailer like opened up that part of what the show will be with, like, it's a lot of relationships and how they interact. So, it's much more, a much better trailer to grab your attention and sell you on the show if it's your thing. They've also, like, increased the way that they're using social media and everything. So, like, I saw, for example, this week an Instagram story where they're teasing out the show. They've had lots of tweets and Instagram posts and the Facebook page. So they're really marketing this thing in a big way. That's the trailer. The other thing is there were two reports this week, one from the Financial Times, right?
Yeah.
And then one from included in Mark Gurman's or a separate story from Mark Gurman on Bloomberg about pricing and launch plans and everything. So what's there from those two reports?
Yeah, so part of the reason that Apple is running so much social media, homepage encouragement for the morning show is they are spending a lot of money on it. Part of the Financial Times story was essentially how Apple's budget is growing for original content. It was reported like in 2017 that they were going to spend $1 billion in the first year. And now it seems like they've already committed $6 billion total. So it's not $6 billion for 1 year's worth of programming, but to date so far, they've committed to $6 billion worth of stuff. And it seems to be that's only over like a 2 year period, essentially. So they basically tripled what they were originally going to spend to secure movies, to secure shows. And apparently a single episode of The Morning Show will cost Apple more than it costs to make an episode of Game of Thrones, which is kind of insane because The Morning Show is not going to have that much visual effects and CGI. And that's a huge money sink. And Game of Thrones would have movie quality effects, right, on every episode. And it seems like Apple's going to eclipse them in per episode spending, and I think the number was 300 million on two seasons of The Morning Show, which works out to $50 million an episode, and presumably a lot of that is just going to actors' salaries for the headline cast, because what else are they going to spend it on, really? Like, The Morning Show, however intricate and incredible the sets are going to be, you know, it's not going to have a visual effects budget, really, right? So they are spending a lot of money. And obviously the question is, are they actually going to make a success out of this thing? And that's kind of where Mark's report from Bloomberg kind of lend into, talking about different options that Apple's been discussing for the kind of Apple TV Plus launch. Obviously, they've said it's coming this fall. Mark said they're looking at November, so not September, so not in line with the phones. Apparently, it's going to come a bit later than that. Presumably not the full content's ready. And it said he said that they will have at least five shows ready to go this fall. But the big question is that enough to get people going? Because you're fighting streaming services that have massive back catalogs, and Apple TV Plus does not have a back catalog of stuff. It's only their original shows, and you're going to get out of the gate with, you know, 5, 10, 15 shows tops, really, 15 shows and movies. And they said they're going to add more every month, but it's going to be a while before there's a decent catalog there. Mm-hmm. And apparently they've been, quote-unquote, weighing a $9.99 price point. Like, it's going to be a hard sell, at least at first, to be able to sell Apple TV Plus at $10 a month when you've only got, like, 12 shows there.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, We saw news this week about more information about Disney Plus, which is just a whole lot of content, you know, for a very good price. You know, what is it, like $8?
Seven bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
even better. And so I think the news there was that it will be on Apple TV 100%. It will work with the TV app, not necessarily be a channel on the TV app, but just by integrating it, that's positive. Unlike Netflix, it's not in the TV app, definitely not a channel. So that's tough, but I think the challenge that I see is if you launch with a few, like, I guess the best case scenario is you just have like a big catalog to go license some content for the back catalog, go from there. But if they're only launching with their own content and it's limited to a few shows, like, ideally you'd wait until you have a big catalog to launch. But if they want to launch when they, you know, this fall with a few shows, then if you had the price be low and then gradually raise it based on the amount of shows there would be, it's tricky too. Like, having one price from the start and then just adding more content, it becomes a better and better value. It's hard. It's definitely not a value compared to like what Disney Plus will have in terms of content. That's for sure. But also with $7 and $10, it isn't like you can't have both. You know, we've already seen that with the way people that you use Netflix and Hulu or, you know, other services. It's not attractive though, right? Like, at the start, it will take time for this to be like, that's actually a good service, you know?
Like, you have to have good content and you have to have a decent selection of content. And there's a question mark on whether the stuff's going to be good or not. But, you know, I think at least the tidbits of the storylines and stuff we've seen, mm-hmm. there seems to be some good show dramas and narrative and stuff going on there. But just in terms of numbers, they're going to struggle getting out at the start. Like, I feel like they're going to have a really long free trial or something to get people to subscribe. Because you need to get through, like, the Christmas period of them only having 12 stuff. Like, if they're adding two shows a month, by June, they'll have added, like, another... They've basically doubled their catalogue, right? Yeah. Like, in addition to having new episodes of all of the shows, they'll also be expanding into new shows and films. So they're going to ramp up, and I'm sure in the longer term, it becomes a much more compelling offer. It's just that out the gate, they're going to struggle to sell people on that kind of stuff. I almost feel like they need a 6-month free trial so that people get into it. And maybe by the time that 6 months starts to expire, then they drop like season 2 of the morning show. And it's like, well, at that point, you've got to keep paying to you know, carry on with the show that you're hooked on.
And season 2 is already planned. Like, there are many shows that Apple bought the rights to seasons of the show. And part to make their, you know, their purchase better, like, you know, if they're competing with other like where the show would have gone if Apple TV Plus didn't exist, you know, their leverage was, we'll buy 2 seasons, you know, and commit to that.
Because obviously music has a 3-month trial, mm-hmm. News Plus only has a 1-month trial.
Yep.
Apple TV Plus is Apple's own content, so they should have the freedom to choose what trial they want and mm-hmm. what price they want, really. Obviously, they have to offset the cost of production because eventually they want to make money off this thing. So even if you just took the morning show budget, right, which was $600 million, and then you divide that by 12, and then you divide that by 10, you got to spend, like, you got to get 5 million subscribers just to pay for the morning show at $10 a month.
Yeah,
right? Like, it's an uphill battle.
And all of it is it's a big deal because it's a new service and Apple, you know, they want their services to grow, but it's not like if this is their only business, you know, like Netflix can use investors and they can play with a lot of factors that way. But Apple, you know, I think it would take a lot for TV Plus to like drain their business. You know, they can make a lot of mistakes and figure it out. They don't have to make money, you know, at first to start out, and they can really build it out and just have it be there and improve on.
Which is part of the way they could afford a really long trial. Like, a 6-month trial, they could get easily pay off, right? Like, it's not a problem for them to do that and to finance it. Like, $6 billion is a lot, but Apple makes a lot of money, so it's not like, well, we can go for it. And even on the last earnings call, Luca Mastri had a quote where it was like, the road to monetization on these services is long. So I think they were kind of like laying the framework to, like, because obviously all the investors are all on this services narrative, right?
Yeah.
Like, all these new services are coming, these new services, and they're going to take over the world. I think they were trying to set some expectations that, you know, yeah, we're on that trajectory, we're on that path, but don't expect Apple TV Plus subscriptions to have a meaningful impact on like Q1 holiday earnings.
Well, I mean, even like, the first iPhone wasn't like that either. It took time to expand and you know, be a massive hit. So.
Yeah, but it just, if the morning show is unsuccessful, that's a lot of money they've thrown away, if you know what I mean.
Like, well,
there's definitely risk, a lot of risk.
Yeah. They've, at the worst, they've bought Beats twice, you know, with this whole deal, so, which is not a great big deal to Apple. So what was the Facebook FCC fine? It was like, was it $5 billion?
$5 billion, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like...
So $5 billion of TV shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's why it's so interesting to me, this TV Plus thing, is that I'm pretty optimistic on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like a good venture for them to go into, but it's not like a surefire home run. Like, there is plenty of opportunity for them to stumble and to fail to pick up subscribers and have bad shows, maybe, or have good shows, but not enough good shows. Like, that's why it's so interesting to watch, because they're definitely putting a lot of attention on it, but it's not going to be like a smash hit from day one. It's not like when we saw the AirPods, right? We're like, those things look great. And then they, you know, they exploded.
Yeah.
TV Plus is like, you know, it's got some good parts and it's got some bad parts, and it's going to have a very big uphill battle getting out of the gate with, you know, 12 shows.
Yep. Anything more from TV Plus for you?
The only other thing was that Mark said that Apple was undecided on how they were going to release the episodes. And obviously we talked before, they're going to do like a Netflix binge where they list a whole season at a time. One of the things that Mark mentioned was that they were considering releasing the first 3 episodes together and then going week by week.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a bit of a compromise in both directions. I think week by week suits them a lot, because especially when you have smaller content library, you don't want to have it drop all at once and have nothing else for the rest of the month. Like, at least you can have new episodes every day, essentially. Like, if you have 12 shows, that means you're releasing 2 new episodes a day, right? Like, across a week. So, if you're doing week by week, if you release them all at once, you're going to run out. So, for me, like, week by week is the obvious choice. But releasing 3 to go with maybe is also okay, because then you can at least get people. Although 3 would kind of imply a shorter trial, because it's like, we're going to give you 3 free episodes and then we want you to be hooked for episode 4, essentially.
Well, what if the trial isn't a time period, but it's, you know, number of shows? like what you get is you can watch this show 3 times, you can watch that show up to, you know, 3 episodes, and it's like a trial, a number of episodes per series, and that's your trial. And then you can, in those first, and that's like what reviewers get when they review a show, is like the first, you know, few episodes. They don't get like the conclusion and everything. That's for everyone to watch, but that could work. It's like, it doesn't matter how long you've had this going for, you know, but you get 3 episodes. That's enough to see.
Yeah, it's kind of like freemium model where you have 3 episodes that anyone can watch. Yeah. And then if you want to watch the rest of the season, you have to be a subscriber.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that model is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
It would certainly fit what they need.
Yeah, and it fixes the whole binge it, you know, and you can get everything in the free trial if you don't leave your home for, you know, a week.
And I do think that, yes, it's a very, like, if you just had a pair of scales and dumped all of Disney's content and all of Apple's content, you know, it's going to weigh very heavily in one direction. Mm-hmm. But you only need 2-3 big hit shows that are like thrillers and gripping. And
HBO does fine with that for $15 a month.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, HBO basically became to notoriety of one show for 8 years, like Game of Thrones, right? Like, that was there were plenty of people who would subscribe to HBO just for Game of Thrones.
And over the years, they've had a version of Game of Thrones, whether it's The Sopranos or whatever, The Wire. But it's all at different points in history. But they've often had one big show that people subscribe to, maybe a few. But that's kind of what Apple can do here too. No one's gonna, Disney Plus is like an anomaly in all of this.
Yeah, you don't need to match on number, you don't need to match on quantity, but there is a minimum bar, and you probably do need more than 12, which is why the initial launch period is going to be a struggle.
Yep, I'm very down on the whole release one episode a week kind of thing, though. It just feels too artificial, and then too complex. Like, once you get more than, you know, a few shows, I think if you stuck to that, it would be very annoying, because it's like, all right, what show? You sign up brand new as a customer, you know, in like, you know, month 6 or whatever. And it's like, okay, certain shows have every episode is out because it's been out for this long. Certain shows are week, you know, new only. And that's more like the classic TV model of like certain shows are in season now, certain shows are old, but we don't expect that from streaming so much. Hulu's done some of that, you know, with some series, not every series. Obviously it was like a live show. It comes out as it's recorded. But in this case, you know, when they have seasons ready to go, I think it's complicated to say. This one came out in May, so it's still, you know, releasing every week, and this one's been out since last December, so you can binge all of it and have that to constantly kind of manage as a customer what's out, what's new, and what's, you know, what do I get full access of?
Yeah, although that's where ideally the recommendations, the featured sections of the TV app should plug the gap, right? Like even if you are releasing all the seasons at once, you still have to track what's out and what's coming out, right? Like,
well, you either see it or you don't see it there.
Yeah, like it's the same difference at the end. It's just different denominations of the same thing. To me, if you're spending $15 million an episode on stuff, like, it feels a pretty big waste to dump essentially $300 million worth of content in a single day and then have nothing for another 6 months and then bring out season two. Like, surely, I think week by week suits them a lot. Like, We'll see, I guess.
Yeah, we will see. Let's talk about Apple Arcade. This is their other service, the gaming service that they showed off first in the March event, announced to be coming out in the fall. So most of this happened over the weekend. What the heck happened here?
Yeah, Rambo, obviously 95 Mac contributor, found a way to activate the internal like testing sandbox for the Apple Arcade system on macOS Catalina. And so we essentially got screenshots of what the arcade screens look like on Catalina, like not the sign up now, we'll tell you when arcade's out, like the actual interface for where the game is going to be listed. And funnily enough, the internal beta actually had like early builds of, you know, a handful of titles in there. So Jeff Benjamin followed Rambo's instructions to get it set up, and he actually did hands-on videos with all of the current
like
games.
17 minutes of commentary and excellent visuals of like on video of the MacBook Pro with like a beautiful blur background. It looks great. Like I couldn't imagine him doing that, but it looks really great. Like yeah. Just his capture style and everything, it was terrific.
Yeah, and he had like, He basically showed what was available in each of the titles, which ones are his favorites, which ones are like a still in development. A lot of the builds that were on there were only like the first level, or they had obvious missing flaws. But you could definitely get a sense of what the service is going to be. And he said there were highlights, was like a game called Sneaky Sasquatch and a game called Hot Lava. They look really cool. A lot of the other titles on there do look a lot like, you know, iPhone puzzle web kind of style games, but we are at the end of the day only seeing six of what is going to be 100 plus roster of games, and it's hard to really make decisive decisions on whether each of these games are going to be compelling or not, because a lot of them are, at the moment, are just showing like one level. And there was even some that when you launch one of these games, it's meant to show you like an Apple Arcade logo, but because these are still so early builds, it would just say in like Helvetica text, Apple Arcade logo here. And then it would carry on loading the game. It's quite funny. And it's just amazing that we've even got this opportunity to actually like look at this stuff. Because realistically, this is only meant for internal employees to see. And, you know, 95 Mac has successfully documented it on the web for everyone to look at. So it's a really cool achievement.
If it's in the code, Rambo will find it. Yeah.
And talking of what was in the code, Rambo found a reference to a price point. So the internal beta was free for a month, and then it put people on a 49-cent trial. But obviously that beta price didn't mean anything. That was just for internal employees to actually use the system and pay for the subscription, etc., etc. But deeper in the code, not exposed in the UI, Rambo found a reference to a $4.99 per month price point. So that at least suggests that that's where they're going. And, you know, Apple News Plus is $9.99. Apple TV Plus has been rumored at $9.99. I think then the most natural guess for what Apple Arcade would be $9.99. But $4.99 is a lot lower. Like, mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think it goes from, we will try this for $10 a month, and if my kids like it, we'll keep it going. But they've got to like love it, to $5 a month, you know, $60 a year. That's like the cost of like one console game per year. They don't have to like it. They can just kind of enjoy it, but not like love it. You know what I mean? It takes the, you know, I mentioned a few weeks ago, like the idea of taking, you know, a portion of money for like trial subscriptions and revolving, you know, changing which ones you stick with and which ones are like mandatory. They would have to like arcade a lot for $10 a month, I think, to me, to make that like it stays in the rotation. But for $5, it could be much more forgiving. They can just like, they don't have to play every day. And as a parent, it makes me feel good, because I don't necessarily want them to play every day. Like if they play like on a weekend for $5 a month, I'm okay with that. You know, it's way more compelling that way. And what we've seen in the preview, like in Jeff's video, they say what 100 plus games, and they've even shown many that are not in the video that you couldn't access yet because either they're not finished yet or whatever. What he showed for $5 a month is like pretty interesting. What they will release is going to be even more compelling. So, you know, it's almost like, Disney Plus is like a great value. This looks like it will be a great value because you've got no ads, no in-app purchases, no paid up front games even. And you just don't have to deal with freemium, you know, in-app purchases and like that. It will be awesome. And, I struggle all the time with finding good apps to, you know, games to let my kids have on their devices, you know, because it's so hard to find something that's like, my preference is paid up front, never pay again.
Yeah.
And just so that their experience is, I have this and it's not going to change. To have arcade will be a breath of fresh air in that environment where, you know, you subscribe, as long as you subscribe, you get access to this stuff. So,
it is a real shame, but the current state of the App Store makes it really hard to find
children's
games that aren't scams, essentially.
Yeah. Or if, like, you're willing to pay, you know, like the what is it, the Toca Boca app developers, they do a really good job of paid up front, no in-app purchase games. But I can't think of another who does a great job right now.
They're the exception, not the rule.
Like, right. Yeah.
Most kid games you download have ads that you have to wait for, many of them now don't even let you skip the ads. Like,
and they've got very difficult ads. Like my daughter is 6 and pretty savvy on the iPad, but like oftentimes she will get stumped on how to close, you know, an interrupting ad.
Like, the interstitials have completely different interfaces across all different games. The close buttons aren't in the same places. They try and really sneakily hide it all over the place. Yep. And if you like tap one picture to the left, oh, you've opened Safari to whatever this ad was. Like, terrible experience. And then they all have like some kind of gems or coins mechanic, which, you know, you don't have to pay for, but they keep shoving it in your face. Oh, you want to buy some more gems? And like all of that stuff is problems that arcade won't have.
Yeah.
And so it's a really nice, like, safe haven from all of us.
If I look at my daughter's iPad Safari, it's like tabs and tabs and tabs full of where did the ad in the game take her? And I would love to, whenever Arcade comes out, be like, hey, this is the, you know, these are all your new games. Cause Arcade will be a section within the App Store, and then you download what games you want from that section.
Yep.
As like a full blown game on your iPad. Like, on the Apple TV, they've got an arcade section and an arcade app. And we don't know what will be in the arcade app because right now it's just a teaser. So is the App Store section, but presumably it's the same situation. You just got two places to do the same thing.
I think basically because they're trying to push it harder on the TV because it's like a console. So they have like direct, here's the actual game section.
And the App Store is popular on the iPhone, but the App Store is kind of a stagnant place on tvOS.
You kind of go, that's why they've got a separate icon for it.
Yeah, that's fair. But I will be glad to go through and do a cleanup of like, is this a Toca Boca app or not? And if it's not one that I trust and know for being not scammy, you know, or spammy, you know, spammy even, I will happily replace those with arcade apps and see what, you know, see what happens.
Yeah, and it's kind of a funny contrast where we have TV Plus like scraping together a dozen shows and then Arcade's going to come out with 100 games at least.
Well, a dozen shows times how many episodes.
True.
But yeah, I get your point. Yeah,
it's kind of like if Apple TV Plus was launching with 100 shows, we wouldn't have been having the prior conversation about content selection.
Yeah. By the way, I shared the link to apple.com, the homepage for Apple, whenever they replaced the top tile with the morning show trailer. Yeah. And I sent it to my aunt, who is like, she uses Apple product, but she's not like a tech person, you know, at all. And I didn't tell her like what to look at. She knew that I was talking about the trailer with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. But her response was, is that Apple's first movie? And so she took it from like just looking at the trailer, like, oh, this will be a movie that comes out, and not like reading around and seeing what TV Plus is. Have you had an experience like that with sharing TV Plus, like the trailer, for example, with family?
Yeah, I showed the morning show trailer to my mom, and she was like, oh, that looks cool. I like Jennifer Aniston. I'll watch that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a diverse cast. It's white people. It's two women and one man. It's not a diverse cast. Yeah, as far as we can tell, but it is in terms of like just like star power. It is a pretty good play for one of the first shows. So, you know, we already know that there will be lots of more diverse casts in future shows. They've already shown. But yeah, it's a pretty good trailer for the start. With Arcade, though, it's like, yeah, I think Arcade will be, and because it's family sharing, you know, you pay once and everyone in your family with six people, you and five more, can access the same thing and have your own like game progress on your own devices and everything, and even like compete, I guess, you know, if you wanted to. It's going to be a good value. If the $4.99 price that they include in the code, you know, is what they do, not just kind of a placeholder, I'm really optimistic about Arcade.
Yeah, like the especially cross-platform things. Like we were just talking about how bad all the kids' games are on the phone. It's like, and they're only on the phone and the iPad, whereas all the arcade games have to be cross-platform. So you can go from playing on the phone on your iPad and then play it on the TV if you want. And then, you know, if you're bored, like even if you're buying it for your kids, but you've got a fair few minutes in your new computer, you know, just buy a little puzzle game that you can play through Arcade on the Mac as well. Like,
and good win for the game makers too, because these are games that they just couldn't justify making in this way with this pay method, you know. If they need to be in-app purchases and paid up front and ads and everything.
Apple's basically fronting the money for them to be made.
Like, yeah, like Jeff's favorite game from his gameplay was made by two people in Canada, and that's the entire studio, and they get to take like months to work on this game. I forget the name of the one that he liked the most, but it's in his story.
It's the sneaky Sasquatch one.
Yeah, yeah. So the developers behind that, like, they've got a very small following on Twitter for their game development, you know, company. I don't know what other titles they've made, if they've made anything else, but that was like his like favorite. He thinks it's gonna be like a sneak hit, and it's two people, and they can work on that, you know, for, you know, months at a time, and they've been paid. Just like we've discussed it before, but it's like, you know, you get a book deal and they pay you first, and then you go and write the book.
Yep.
And it's literally that for games.
Yeah, I'm gonna be a bit of a downer. I don't think it's gonna be $4.99 a month. I just think it's too cheap. For what you get, it's just way too cheap. And it would make like it kind of embarrassed like News Plus even more. It's like, oh, you've paid $9.99 for these magazines, but you can get all these games for half the price. So they need like a unified front. Like maybe $7.99 is a better place for it. Like I think $4.99 is too low. So that's my opinion. Maybe I'd be wrong. And obviously they're clearly, you know, going $4.99 at the moment, but that price can change. So I personally expect it will launch higher. But even at $7.99, I still think it's a very good offering.
Yeah. One thing we do know is that, like, with Apple Music, it's $10 a month, or if you're a student, it's $5 a month if you can prove it, through, I guess, the university program that lots of companies use, if you're a college student, I guess. And then there's a family plan for $15 a month up to six users. We already know that TV Plus and Arcade and News Plus was already out. Those are one price for an individual and the same price for families. There's no student pricing for News Plus yet. We don't know that there'll be student pricing for TV Plus or Arcade. But we do know that so far they just plan one price for everybody. So it isn't like the $5 mention is for students. Based on what they've said so far, it's just like it'll be one price for everybody. So
with family sharing.
Yeah, with family sharing, right? Which is even more compelling, you know, if you use that feature. So yeah, we'll see what happens there. We're upfront about the discovery and what it is. Like we're not saying someone with an Apple told us it's going to be $5. It's that Rambo discovered a reference in code to say $4.99. So that must be what they're planning. It's not a random placeholder. And it's kind of like the 49-cent thing is like, what's the smallest version of that? Cause they could do a penny there and they'd be fine too. But yeah, we'll see. And, presumably we'll see like at the iPhone event. Like, I don't know why they would announce it later unless they just wait until it's out. But presumably at the iPhone event, which we believe is September the 10th, we'll know maybe not about TV Plus, but surely we learn about all the mysteries from the March event. They're all solved at the September event, don't you think?
Yeah, I think the attention on the iPhone event means they will talk about their services there. It's just a perfect marketing opportunity. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not coming out to November or whatever, they're going to talk about it.
Like, yeah, because iPhone is a big attention.
They'd be stupid not to, because if we don't even know if there is going to be an October event yet, but if there is, the October event will get like a third of the interest as a September event.
Yep. We see that internally with just page views on stories. You know, when we have multiple events, the iPhone one is the big one of the year. So makes the most sense. Finally, I'll say that the PowerBeats Pro, totally wireless earphones that came out earlier this year around April and May, they were announced in four colors. They launched only in black. And next week, they'll be in stores and available to purchase. Now, I think you can pre-order them as of today. And the three other colors that were shown, which is ivy, like green. I guess maybe it's called moss. I don't know. But it's like a green color.
Yeah, it's called moss, yeah.
Yeah, a green color, a navy color called navy, and then ivory is what I'm thinking of, which is like the soft pink kind of color or off-white kind of color.
Yeah, like bone white or whatever you want to call that.
Yeah, and so we've had all black so far. These are the other three colors that have the black case, but they have different colors of the actual earphones. And the neat thing to me is that the color options they're two-toned, and that the Beats logo is a different color than the earphone, so it pops more there. But they said later this summer, whenever the black ones launched, and summer is almost over, and they made the cut, so that's a thing now.
And it does prove that Apple can make truly wireless earphones in more than one color.
Yes, they can. What is it, Jaws said we like the white when people ask, like, is somebody in an interview or somewhere said, like, why don't you make more colors of AirPods? And there's AirPods, and they're like, we like the white. We like the black, so.
They'll make colors. Black eventually.
Yeah, hopefully.
They just will. Just do it. I won't buy black AirPods.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at ApolloZach. Benjamin, you're only on Twitter at
BZAMayo.
And also follow 9to5Mac on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and YouTube. And if you have any feedback for us, you can email us at happyhour@9to5Mac.com. If you want us to answer any questions in a future episode, you can tweet at us, or actually just tweet in general with the hashtag Ask9to5Mac, and that will go in our special column, and we'll see your question. And when we have time in the future, we'll try and answer those questions. So thanks for those questions so far and the feedback on the episodes when we include those. And with that being said, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.